Of stories about how nothing seems to work. Is Britain still a capable nation? And if not, why not? But first, Reform leader Nigel Farage says he'll withdraw from the Refugee Convention and plan for mass deportations. Do you have faith in politicians to tackle the small boats crisis? You can call me on 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Reform UK leader Nigel Farage is due to set out his party's plan to tackle illegal migration. A record total of more than 28,000 people have crossed the English Channel in small boats so far this year. Ministers insist they are getting a grip on the issue, partly through a returns deal with France. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark has more details.
The Reform Party leader is expected today to lay out more details of his immigration plans, including how he would organise the mass deportations of all foreign criminals by putting a duty on the Home Secretary to remove people. And anyone coming to the UK on a small boat would be banned from claiming asylum. He will also accuse the Prime Minister of being on the side of human rights lawyers rather than the British people. Labour say the policy is written on the back of a fag packet, and the Tories say Reform are just copying their old ideas.
A housing minister's told LBC that the government is not opposed to people owning second homes. Matthew Pennycook was responding to claims of hypocrisy over Angela Rayner's purchase of a flat near Brighton. The housing secretary also has a home in Greater Manchester and a Grace and Favour flat in London. But Mr Pennycook's insisted it's not a story.
I don't understand what the charge is in terms of hypocrisy. We have allowed councils to introduce a council tax premium if they want to use it to manage excessive concentrations of second homes and short-term lets in their areas. Brighton and Hove have made use of that, and the Deputy Prime Minister will pay it in full. But what we're not saying is that no one can own a second home across the country.
Large crowds have gathered in Israel calling for a deal with Hamas to release the hostages remaining in Gaza. Several major routes were blocked by demonstrators early this morning. It follows the killing of at least 20 people, including five journalists, on a strike in a hospital in Khan Yunis yesterday. Two police officers have been killed and another seriously wounded in a shooting in rural Australia. The suspect remains at large, with people in the small town of Porepunkah told to remain indoors. Mike Bush is the Chief Commissioner of Victoria Police.
We believe he is armed. We have deployed every specialist resource into this area to locate him. It is our priority.
And peers could be forced to resign if they do not contribute enough to the House of Lords. The Lords leader, Baroness Smith, says Labour is also keen to press ahead with a compulsory retirement age of 80. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was down 48 at 92.73. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, a mixture of sunshine and showers for many, feeling very warm in eastern areas, a high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Penny Mordaunt.
Good morning. I'm Penny Mordaunt, standing in for James O'Brien until 1 o'clock. And you're listening to LBC. Now, folks, you might be forgiven for thinking it's Groundhog Day. That's because the papers are yet again littered with various parties' plans of how to stop the boats. Labour has been talking today about its returns agreement, its so-called one-in-one-out policy, or more accurately, 1,800 in and 100 out. And Reform are unveiling their plans in the next hour for how they want to tackle this problem. My question for you is, do you have any faith left that anyone can tackle this issue? And later today from 11, I'm going to be talking about whether this issue has become totemic for a wider problem. Is Britain capable of doing anything? If you look at the papers, there's lots of stories about how nothing seems to work. And I know how that is. A lot of people are feeling that way right now. Are we still a capable nation? And if not, why not? You can give us a call or WhatsApp us on 0345 6060973 or ping us a text message on 84850. Want to hear from you this morning. So let's turn to that topic that has been discussed on this programme probably about 3,000 times in the last year, the issue of small boats. Now, Nigel Farage is expected to unveil his plans today. He's obviously spoken about this a lot, but he's going into some depth today, we hope. And he is planning on setting out how he's going to arrest, detain and deport anyone who comes here illegally. To do that, he says he's going to have repatriation agreements with countries that are not considered safe, places like Afghanistan and Eritrea, and also that he's going to have arrangements with third countries such as Rwanda and Albania, so that if people can't go back to where they came from, they can go to somewhere else. I know you will have heard a lot of this before from other parties. And he's also got this idea of sort of having a holding pen on Ascension Island so that people can be placed there, presumably whilst they're waiting to go somewhere else. And that actually is legally a bit easier because we don't have some of the legal obstacles to do that that other politicians have been grappling with, sending people to Rwanda, for example. And critically, he's going to make it a duty on the Home Secretary that they must deport illegal migrants and that no one can have their case heard in a court if they have come here illegally. And again, you may have feelings of slight deja vu around that with some of the things that were done under the last government. Critically and most interestingly, he says he's going to disapply the Refugee Convention. So this was a set of rules drawn up many years ago in 1951. And it is the obligations that nations have to take people for a very broad range of issues. So if they're facing any danger at all in their country, if they're being discriminated in any way, and there's been lots of debate around how the scope of that is too wide. So he says he's going to disapply that and that he can do so because he views the situation as a national emergency. And that's something that I think a lot of people are focused on right now. I chair the Coalition for Global Prosperity, and that is one of the pieces of work that it is doing, looking at rewriting that convention so it's fit for the modern world. It's fit for a world where people have mobile phones, for example, which wasn't the case in 1951. So he says he's going to do that. And of course, we know he said this before, but he's going to remove us from the jurisdiction of the European Court of Human Rights. And that, again, lots of focus has been on that, particularly the practices of the court, which have been viewed very problematic. Organisations like Policy Exchange have done a lot of work on why the practices of that court are no longer fit for purpose. Lots of people hold out hope that it might be reformed, but I have to say that the growing swell of opinion is that it can't be. And he's also saying he's going to repeal the Human Rights Act, which was a bit of domestic legislation which sort of baked in a lot of these things. The European Convention on Human Rights, when that was written, you can derogate from it. We've only ever derogated from it once. But the Human Rights Act bakes in some of these things, and so he is understandably wanting to tackle that. We don't know what he's going to say in detail yet. We will bring you an update on that a bit later on. But he hasn't trailed that he's going to tackle the Supreme Court, which is obviously another one of those legal bodies which has been causing some difficulty when people have been trying to deport people who've come here illegally. And so it'll be interesting to see whether he raises that. In addition to that, we've got Labour today talking about their returns policy. And this is something that Nigel Farage will run into. It's all very well having good ideas, but unfortunately, they meet with reality. And Labour have had their housing minister, brave decision given what's happened with Angela Rayner today, out on the airwaves this morning. And he was speaking to Nick Ferrari earlier on. This is Matthew Pennycook, and he has been talking about their returns agreement.
The charge that we haven't got a grip on this issue, I would disagree. But it was never going to be an overnight fix. But the range of measures we're taking from this groundbreaking pilot scheme with France for returns...
When will we actually see that, Minister?
Well,
I mean, at the moment, the ratio is one out, 18 in.
Well,
I know his speciality was law, but presumably he did get a maths O level, did he, Sakir?
But, Nick, you will know this is a pilot scheme. We're getting it up and running, but we are making progress. The first asylum seekers under that scheme have been detained. We will see removals to France in the coming weeks. But it is not the only part of our strategy. There are many other parts, several of which are not in force, as you're aware. The Borders Bill is still going through Parliament. The French authorities are still reviewing their laws to take more proactive enforcement work in shallow waters. So it's all coming through. It won't be overnight.
Indeed.
But it is starting to make tangible progress.
So, folks, it's not going to be overnight. I know that you've been living with this for a long time. And I think... the mood of the country now is they just want someone to grip this and think about what is actually required to get this done. From my perspective, I spent a lot of time when I was International Development Secretary of State learning about migration routes. I spent a lot of time out on the water, in the Aegean, in the Mediterranean, in North Libya, looking at actually what would make a difference to stop people coming, to stop people trying to make those terribly dangerous journeys. And I think we've got to have some fresh thinking on this. I mean, just take Labour's returns agreement, which they're talking about today, and it'd be interesting to get your views on it. A real returns agreement that would enable us to return 100% of the people who are coming here from northern France, that would be worth something. And I think we have to start thinking about what would we want to give France in return for such an agreement. And actually, it's not support and help on their northern border. It's actually support and help on their southern border. So I think we do need some fresh thinking on this. We might get some today from Nigel Farage, but I'm sure that he is going to come under pressure to talk about the practicalities of how he is actually going to deal with this. And of course, in recent days, we've also had Labour peer Lord Glassman say that we should be deploying the fleet. He thinks that things have got to that point. And I think that a lot of people in the country would concur with that. Again, I happen to know that the Navy have spent a lot of time thinking about this issue, thinking about what they could practically do. And it is extremely difficult to push boats back without endangering life, which, of course, no one wants to do. But we've got to have that strong deterrent. And to date, we have not had that. We've got record numbers today, record numbers of people crossing the channel, record numbers of people applying for asylum. And I think that the country has had enough of this. The question is, who can rally? Who can come up with those policies and actually do the tough thinking to really think about how we leave some of these legal frameworks, but also critically put together that operational framework, the things that are going to deter people, that are going to push people back, that are going to help other nations like France deter people from coming into their borders too, because that is part of the problem. And we've got to treat this as a military operation, in my view. I'm going to go to a call now, and it's great to see so many of you phoning in. I'm going to go to William, who's in central Scotland. Hello, William.
Good morning, Penny.
Morning. What do you think? Do you have faith that this can be tackled?
Yes, I think people are overthinking it. I think people are overly emotional about this. I think we do need fresh thinking. That's just what you were saying there in your opening gambit. And I would introduce a model which I'm sure you're familiar with, Penny, and that's the harm chain model. Who's causing the harm? Who's being harmed? And who's legislating the harm? Are you familiar with that model, Penny?
I've heard of it, but you sound like an expert, William. So far away.
Well, I'm far from an expert, but if we just think creatively and we work together, who's causing the harm, we can see that it's not just the migrants. The migrants are causing harm, but the taxpayers are being harmed, but some of them are causing harm with their behaviour. And we've also got the behaviour of status quo politicians. Some of them actually support migrants because, whether they're illegal or illegal, because that is a way for them to deal with an ageing population. And I think if you really look hard about that and do the deep dives and really think about who's causing the harm, who's being harmed, and who's legislating, you can see that the migrants are actually here, the ones on the boats, to teach us all a lesson. And the lesson that they're coming here to teach us is that life isn't as good as it is here in other countries. And those people that come here to risk their lives, they're the lucky ones. Those are the ones that have the ability to leave their country. Most of the people in their countries that are suffering don't have the ability to leave. So what we really need is a solution whereby the suffering of the people of the world is alleviated. The suffering of British people and the suffering of people coming here on boats. And that's why I think the real solution will come from people who are advocating for a complete change of our system, a complete change of our economic system, where there is fairness and opportunity for all, and people can be and live in their own countries and live well, like we do in this country. And I think that's the root of the problem.
So, William, it sounds like you're advocating for Britain's aid budget. You're advocating for us to get further upstream with the issue, trying to, whether it's food security or job creation. Is that part of your solution, that we would start to intervene further upstream to mitigate against people wanting to move in the first place?
No, I'm advocating for the people of this country and other countries to wake up and realize that they are being scammed. And once they realize that, and I think people are realizing it, people will start to, the voices will unite and they say, we want a better system. Right now, you work away, you pay your taxes, and it's an absolute nightmare. It's a beast system that we live under, and it doesn't have to be like this. We don't have to argue about capitalism versus socialism, left versus right. If we just simply look at them the way things are, we can fix them. We can fix the central banking problem, which is like a parasite on our back. We can have a new financial system whereby we have fairness for all, opportunity for all. We just need to wake up and realize that we're living in a prison with an open door.
So I think I agree with you, William, that the public don't care actually whether it's a blue cat or a red cat. They just want some mice caught. But you're advocating for sort of a quite radical change of how the world's financial systems work. It sounds like you are.
Yes, because, I mean, on a very simple level, we have these pieces of magic paper that we go out, we work away so that someone says, good job, and then we use those pieces of magic paper to get food. And we have to use some of those pieces of magic paper to then pay for the government to provide services and build infrastructure. But it doesn't have to be that way. We could have public banking. We could have a new system based upon heart-centered thinking as opposed to the service to self. And that's what, when I said that the migrants are here to teach us an issue, they're teaching us that a lot of us are entitled. A lot of us are in that service to self mindset, and we're not thinking about how we can really contribute and how we can be service to others. So I just think it's so simple, and I think this is going to lead to huge transformation when people realize that the migrants are not the enemy. It's the system that makes us all suffer, and we need a new system where the suffering of the people of the world is alleviated.
Well, I admire your ambition, William. I think we started this morning with the question about how do you stop some inflatable dinghies, and you're wanting to tackle a much bigger program for global reform. Incidentally, actually, I was quite surprised to learn that the only European leader who is actually increasing their aid budget to try and get upstream of this problem is Meloni in Italy, which is not necessarily supported by all in her party, but I just found that very interesting indeed. You're listening to Penny Mordaunt on LBC. The time is 10:19.
LBC.
The holiday park industry is in the spotlight after thousands of holiday park homeowners lost what they...
You've heard it in the news. Holiday park homeowners being hit with sudden site fee increases, fake resale promises, and dramatic losses in the value of their holiday homes. The Holiday Park Advice Centre could help you get compensation if you were missold. Contact the Holiday Park Advice Centre today. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Zero, nada, zilch. When Vauxhall say 0%, they mean 0%. 0% APR is available now across the Vauxhall car range, including the all-new Frontera Electric. With a minimum 20% deposit and up to 4 years on offer, what's not to like? And now, for a limited time, get an extra £500 towards your new Vauxhall. Search Vauxhall to find out more. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, £500 contribution on new car orders between 23rd of August to 8th of September 2025. 18 plus, subject to status and availability, T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've travelled far and wide because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
Okay, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz.
This is LBC with Penny Mordaunt. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 10:20. Welcome back. You're listening to Penny Mordaunt on LBC. And we are, yes, you guessed it, talking about small boats again. We're talking about Labour's return scheme, which they've been out talking about today. And we are expecting news any moment from Nigel Farage at his press conference about his plans to stop the boats. But we're asking this morning, do you have faith that anyone can? Let's go to Dave from, well, hey, Portsmouth.
I knew you'd like that, Penny. And you were my very good MP as Portsmouth North. I must say, you were very good in those days. And you also used to go to Cosham Conservatives Club, didn't you?
I did. I was occasionally found holding a pint in there.
I never saw you in there, but one of my friends said you looked very tired.
Well, that's because I was working my socks off for you, Dave, obviously.
I was going to ask you really quickly. Are you glad you're out of all that stuff now with politics and being in this cabinet?
Well, you know, I wouldn't be standing in for James O'Brien if I was still the MP for Portsmouth North. But I loved it, Dave. I was very proud to represent you. But enough of you being very nice to me. What do you think, Dave? Are you confident that someone can tackle this issue? Are you confident that we can chip away at it? Or do you think that it's too big an issue for us to tackle?
In a word, no. The reason being is we've had all these Home Secretaries and Prime Ministers who are absolutely confidently in saying it's definitely going to be sorted, we're going to smash the boats, and nothing ever happens. And I said to Nick Ferrari a month or two ago, and he spoke about this subject, and I said, why don't we do it the other way around? Instead of having people coming into Dover and other places, it's too late. Why can't we get some of our border force and other authorities in the French areas, such as on the coast there, and stop them going over? Is that possible?
So, I mean, anything is possible, Dave. I mean, I always think we need to tackle it upstream a bit more as well. We need to, if we want something really serious with France, we want to be able to send everyone back, then we perhaps are better off helping France sort some of their issues out, as opposed to putting all our resources, very expensive resources, on their northern border. But I mean, Donald Trump's managed to do this, hasn't he, Dave? Lots of criticism about him, but he has actually closed down the illegal migration that was on the US's southern border very successfully. So if he can do it, why can't we?
Exactly. Now, he doesn't care what anyone thinks, which is the big difference. Where some of our ministers are petrified of losing their job. That's one thing. And also, he was elected the first time over. One of his policies were, we're going to stop the Mexicans coming in, and he wanted that big wall built. Do you remember? He got loads of votes for that.
Yes, I mean, I think if people can sort this out, it'd be very popular. I don't think people would be worried about losing their jobs, Dave. But it sounds like you don't have much faith that anyone can do this.
No, I don't believe a word they say, unfortunately. And how many times have you heard that? MPs are okay in their own constituency, and they're very good, a lot of them. But when the more senior they are in the cabinet, and they seem to have more rubbish. As I said, they're so confident in what they say, and nothing is ever going to change. But you know the Royal Beach Hotel in Southsea?
I do.
Well, I couldn't believe it when I found out that I used to do weddings there because I was a wedding photographer, and they had a big banqueting hall, and it's a very nice hotel, literally 20 yards from the seafront. It's now totally acquisitioned by the Home Office for asylum seekers and other people, mostly illegal immigrants, I have to say.
That's gonna harm. I know. I'm sorry to bore the listeners with gratuitous detail about Portsmouth, but that's gonna harm the local economy. I think we were very short of hotels, and we needed to build some more. So that's not good news. Dave, thank you so much. It's lovely to talk to you, and thanks for your kind words as well. We're gonna go now to Mike, who's a bit further down the coast in Poole. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Pen. How are you?
Okay? I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good, thank you. Pen, I agree with the sentiments of the last caller. And I'd also like to add that, you know, the Conservative Party, is not to bash you on the head, but all these politics, to bolster my argument, is that these political parties are fiddling around the edges. And I'll give an example with, for instance, the Rwanda project. If you looked on the small print, it was... And this is factual. If you've looked at the small print, it's an exchange program. And in actual fact, when the Conservative Party arranged this, they were going to deliver able-bodied people in exchange for less abled people, putting more impact on our social services. And what was never discussed was actually how many would be exchanged. And I hear now today, I heard Mick Ferrari on the radio saying that the exchange that they currently have on the current model is one in and 18 out. So under the Rwanda model, how many would have actually been taken out to Rwanda, and how many less abled people would have been put back into the UK? Could you answer that, Pen?
So just for clarity, the numbers that Nick was talking about earlier, that's about Labour's return scheme with France, just in case anyone has got mixed up about that. But you're right. I think the problem with the Rwanda scheme, apart from the fact that an aircraft didn't take off, was I think we need somewhere for people to go, a third country for people to go that can't be sent back to their country of origin, but can't stay in the UK. So that was the merits of the Rwanda scheme, in my view. But people were largely seeing it as a small scheme to act as a deterrent. And I think that's the problem, whether you're talking about Labour's current returns policy or a Rwanda scheme that was mainly designed as a deterrent, that it doesn't actually deter people, because there are pull factors, but there are also push factors as well why people come here. So, I mean, it's water under the bridge now. We've got to look to the future. We've got to look to a Labour government, and we've got to look and see what both Reform and the Conservatives, and if they're interested, the Liberal Democrats as well, are gonna do and put forward about this. But what would you do, Mike? What would your solution to this be?
Well, my be solution that, for instance, politicians should be direct and answer the question that they've been asked on the radio. Ask your direct question: how many were you looking to take in exchange? How many were you?
So
were
you thinking? Mike, you how answered many? You answered your own question, because it wasn't specified, and there was a program there, and I think Suella Braverman said at the time, you know, it would. She wasn't expecting people to be sent to the UK, but it was in the treaty as a reciprocal arrangement. I mean, if you're asking me what I think, I think the answer would have been none sent back to the UK, because we're talking about such small numbers going out there. But it was never specified. So that's the answer to your question. But I was you kind of answered it yourself.
So until we actually leave the ECHR, is that correct, using that terminology that Nigel's suggesting, all of you guys will be powerless to do anything. So I don't know why you don't all just put your hands up and say, you know what, we're not screwed. Let's give Nigel's policy a go. Let's not wait 3 years for Nigel to get in. Let's see if Nigel's scheme actually works. And if it actually works, he won't get into power. So why don't you give that a whirl, Pen?
Well, there might be some Labour ministers tuned in listening to that suggestion, Mike. And I think there is a consensus forming around that we've got to reform some of these legal frameworks and reform some of the practices of things like the European Court. It's great talking to you, Mike. Thank you very much for that. Loads of calls coming in on this issue, and a bit later on we're going to be talking about whether it's totemic for us in the UK, whether it's a signal that we are losing our historic capability, that we don't seem to be able to sort things out, we don't seem to be able to tackle things, whether it's getting the NHS to do what it needs to do and be a universal health service, whether it's about tackling the small boats, whether it's about all the other issues in our in-tray, from potholes to international crises that we don't seem to be able to influence. Want your views on that? But right now, it's time for the news with Thomas Watts.
The Reform UK leader Nigel Farage is to set out his party's proposals to tackle illegal migration. He's criticised the government's new returns deal with France as so minimal as to make no difference. The Housing Minister Matthew Pennycook has defended Angela Rayner's purchase of a flat near Brighton. The property in Hove is in addition to the Housing Secretary's constituency home in Greater Manchester and Grace and Favour flat in London. A man has been arrested on suspicion of murder over the death of an 87-year-old man in South East London. He was pronounced dead at a property in Hither Green in the early hours of Sunday morning. LBC weather, a mixture of sunshine and showers for many, feeling very warm in the east, a high of 26 degrees.
This is LBC.
Zero, nada, zilch. When Vauxhall say 0%, they mean 0%. 0% APR is available now across the Vauxhall car range, including the all-new Frontera Electric. With a minimum 20% deposit and up to 4 years on offer, what's not to like? And now, for a limited time, get an extra £500 towards your new Vauxhall. Search Vauxhall to find out more. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, £500 contribution on new car orders between 23rd of August to 8th of September 2025. 18 plus, subject to status and availability. T's and C's, the Lantis Financial Services.
Tesco Finest Cod. A different kettle of fish. Pan-fried with garlic, slowly baked in butter, or finished with a squeeze of lemon. It'll get you hooked either way. It's why only the finest cuts of wild-caught cod are selected for our delicate and flaky cod loins. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland.
Global Player is home to fantastic podcasts like The Sports Agent. Join Gabby Logan and Mark Chapman as they take you inside the action as football returns for one of its biggest seasons yet. With last-minute winners, transfer sagas and behind-the-scenes secrets. You've seen it happen. Now find out why. The Sports Agent with Gabby Logan and Mark Chapman. Listen now on Global Player.
Penny Mordaunt on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 10:32 and you're listening to Penny Mordaunt on LBC. Now, after 11, we are going to be talking about whether the small boats issue is totemic of where we find ourselves on all sorts of other issues, whether we are actually still a nation that is capable of sorting things out domestically and having an impact on the international stage. Be interested to hear your views on whether you think we are a capable nation anymore, and if you don't think we are, why you think that is. So that's after 11. But back now to the issue of small boats. And mixed views coming in on this. Some of you are full of optimism, others are slightly more sceptical, and in part that may well be because we've been with this problem for a long time. Even before small boats crossings, you will remember that we had a similar situation on lorries making the crossing in the Short Straits. Lots of lorry drivers had their goods ruined and soiled and came under some physical threats as well, with people trying to stow away in their lorries. And so I'd be interested if you think this is an issue that is just going to be with us and we're going to have ways of dealing with migrants when they are coming here illegally forever in the future, and those modes will change and adapt as the people traffickers change their model. So be interested in that if you think this is just something we need to perhaps handle differently. But back to our callers now, and we've got Bazza from Hampton. Hello, Bazza.
Oh, good morning, Penny.
Morning.
A couple of thoughts here. If you wish to reduce the number of asylum seekers come here, I would say that the first thought, consideration, will be the actual criteria by which they're assessed as being genuine asylum seekers. I talk to people, a lot of people, and I actually talk to asylum seekers in our community. And they're nice people, and I say, how do you get over here from wherever you are? And they say, well, apart from actually paying for the money for the smugglers, they're actually schooled by the smugglers in terms of criteria to qualify to be asylum seekers, such as converting to Christianity, such as converting to being gay, which actually allows them, therefore, to actually pass the asylum rules. Now, however, my position is not that I've got an issue with asylum seekers, but actually I think the whole discussion has been framed incorrectly, in that I think asylum seekers should be allowed in the country, given NI numbers, allowed to work straight away and get on with it. And if they fail their asylum applications, fair enough. Because what nobody seems to actually accept is that we have in this country an issue with a falling population rate, okay? We're not producing enough babies. Therefore, we need more people in the country to do work. And there's loads and loads of manual work out there that, for whatever reason, English people or people actually who live here don't wish to do. And these guys coming over are incredibly motivated. They're risking their lives to come here. They're not risking their lives to come here for £50 a week on the dole. They want to get on with it. I've seen them. They're Uber drivers. They'd also risk work. You know, I take my hat off to them. So they are my thoughts. You know, I think get them in, get them working straight away, so they're not a cost, okay? And they will work because they're motivated. They just travel half across the world to get here. If I was in France, And I would not cross the channel to get here. Much as I love England, if I want to come here, I think, right, I'll get my asylum sorted in France. I'll work in France, I'll learn French, and I'll get a plane over when I'm basically a French citizen. That's how I do it. I would not risk my life in the channels. So the incredibly motivated, brave people, they should come over here, get in our numbers, get working. If they don't qualify, be stricter with the actual qualification rules. Send it back, simple.
But Bazza, you're describing there a campaign that actually a lot of church groups have run, saying that asylum seekers, particularly because their assessments take such a long time, should have the ability to work. But do you think that we would have less protests outside asylum hotels, for example, if those people had been given a shovel and were helping the local authority fill in potholes or doing something, not necessarily a job that they could perhaps abscond and drop out the system, but something where they could maybe even volunteer for the local community so they could demonstrate that they wanted to pay back the country they were coming to?
At the moment, they're seen as being leeches on society, whereas in fact they come over here to work. You know, as I said, you don't risk your life for £50 a week on the dole. You know, England still has incredible opportunities for anybody who wishes to have a go and work hard. I know because, you know, my parents came over with nothing. Then they brought me up. You know, my children now go to private school. You know, it's entirely possible if you're motivated. And this country is a fantastic country for opportunities for people who want to give it a go. And I think these people who have risked their lives to come over should be given the opportunity to give it a go.
Thank you, Bazza. A very interesting take on this morning's topic. We're going now to Richard in Battersea. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Penny.
What would you do? Have you got faith that we can sort this out?
Only if the current crop of politicians get a totally different brain state. Basically, they're all suffering from ignoring the KISS idea, which is keep it simple, stupid, right? is merely to stop the boats getting beyond that dotted line in the channel, which is the French area of responsibility. And so what you do, there's a stretch of the channel which is about 30 miles long down the middle. You patrol that with quite a good density of Royal Navy commando ships up and down, up, down, up, down, and you've got drones monitoring anything which comes towards them, and you just simply stop them crossing that line from the French area of responsibility, which means the French have got to deal with them, which means they're going to head back to the French beaches. Simple.
Do you have, Richard, I mean, not that it affects the validity of your point, but do you have any experience of this sort of thing? Have you had any time in the Navy, or I just ask that because you raise it. Have you got any sort of personal experience of trying to do these things?
Well, the nearest personal experience I've got is that when I had my passport nicked on a ferry crossing this channel, the French would not let me onto the dockside at Cherbourg, okay? So we all know that people can be strict about this, but I read loads of military books, and I know what ships can do. And I mean, for example, the commander's got stern launch vessels where if you didn't follow this idea but did follow another one of actually picking up the boats, they got equipment and boats which can haul the dinghies up the back of the boat onto the slope. You know, it's that simple, but this is not that idea. My solution is to simply keep those small boats within the French bit of the channel.
Yeah.
Not crossing the dotted line, which means that they will have to go back to the French beach, which means they'll give up after the first or second attempt, probably.
Yes, I mean, this is something that a number of people have called for recently. I mentioned earlier Lord Glassman. He said that we need to deploy the Navy to do this. I actually happen to know that when this first started becoming a real issue, the Navy did quite a bit of work to see what it could do to repel those boats. Perhaps even, you know, not even that set sort of central line in the channel where they become our problem, but actually further over to France as well. And they tried all sorts of things and concluded that actually it was going to be extremely difficult to do it 100% effectively, and it would be quite a dangerous thing to do. You're asking people to, you know, take great risk when they're doing these things. But you're right, Richard. We used to have coastal forces in great numbers. I was always very keen on deploying our amphibious ships that we had. You mentioned those. They would have made amazing processing centres. They've got facilities to do that. In fact, they've done that elsewhere in the world, and that would have been a very strong sign. But I think that it's from my experience and from what I know that the Navy has looked at, it's very technically difficult to have that as a as something that can just manage to push all of those boats back. So I think even if we did a bit of what you're suggesting, we would still have those legal problems further upstream. But it's worth trying, Richard, isn't it?
Thing is, Penny, that the Navy, what you're talking about, the Navy's rejection of the idea had to be predicated on the fact that the Navy's really short of money and they're actually getting rid of ships in net numbers, aren't they? So they haven't actually got an unbiased appreciation of the situation. What we've got to do is to take on a positive attitude to our naval forces, spend a bit more money, but meanwhile put everything we've got down that dotted line, and basically they're going to give up. You know, after first or second go, they'll give up because they're either going to get exhausted or they're going to run out of petrol.
It would certainly help, Richard, and I'm very proud that I've managed to turn this topic to investing in our fleet, which I obviously bang on about a lot. Richard, that's great. Thanks so much. We're going to Harry now, who's calling from Colville. Hi, Harry.
Morning, Penny. Good to hear from you.
Morning. What do you think?
I think that we're witnessing one of the greatest betrayals of working class people that this country has ever seen.
what we're seeing is utter middle-class guilt. And what sickens me the most is when people, particularly the party who I used to love, the Conservative Party, One Nation Conservatives, saying that people in working-class areas who are voting Reform are either thick or out of touch or racist. No. It's because the problems and risks of legal migration are concentrated into places where there is cheap HMOs. And the biggest problem that we're facing now is that illegal migrants with no registers are in HMOs. And this is the biggest risk. What Kemi Badenoch's doing at the minute and Reform is saying to their local councillors, in every effort to close hotels, that is a mistake. You close hotels, they go into HMOs. In communities where they could be next to vulnerable people and at the heart of communities. And what I find so scary and so wrong at the minute is local authorities are not being straight with people. In my area and in other areas, whether in HMOs, people are not being told. And it's very, very scary because parents cannot make informed decisions about whether they want their children walking alone at night, or whether grandparents or the elderly can be walking alone. And people in middle-class areas will probably hear me thinking I'm being extreme. Come to working-class areas, please, and yeah, you can see what's going on.
HMO applications going up in your area, Harry?
Well, you'll never be able to find out officially, but you can't be. It's just blatantly obvious. Yeah. Down my street in particular, multiple people in a house, but you know, it's one of those things you can't ever prove.
Yeah, I think you've put your finger on it, Harry. And obviously, Whitehall doesn't like asylum hotels because they're very visible, and journalists can put cameras outside them. But HMOs, you're dispersing people. But the problem is that you're going to alter permanently the housing stock in that area, quite often family housing stock. I completely agree with you, Harry. I think that's a very good point indeed. This is LBC with Penny Mordaunt, and the time is 10:46.
This is LBC.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean. I just wanted you to see my new Wickes kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wickes, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, with our spend and save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms and minimum spend apply.
The Virgin Atlantic Holiday Sale is now on. This is your sign to taste Jamaican jerk chicken so good it brings a tear to your eye. Catch a New York basement gig worth the 10-block detour. Or hit the dunes in Dubai and find sand in your pockets for weeks. Seize the sale. Book in-store or online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected routes. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
No one sees your small business like you do. The feeling when that unexpected big contract comes in. The butterflies. But that's the exciting bit of it being your business. And you wouldn't have it any other way. So breathe it all in. When your business is your life, we exist to help you live. Search O2 Business.
Tesco Finest Sugar Bell Tomatoes. The ultimate supporting act. Zinging up salads or elevating fresh linguine. Perfect for when you want to be vined and dined. It's why only the finest varieties are hand-picked when perfectly ripe to ensure our Sugar Bell tomatoes are exceptionally sweet. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. majority of larger stores.
Leading Britain's conversation with Penny Mordaunt. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 10:48. You're listening to Penny Mordaunt on LBC, and we have been talking about small boats. Lots of news today about what Labour and Reform are planning, and obviously comments from other parties about what they think about it, and saying that they've tried it all before. We've had some great calls looking at this issue, lots of good suggestions, but I think the overall theme is people want this grip. They want to people to get on with it, and they're starting to lose faith in Whitehall, certainly, and in our politicians to be able to do that. We go now to David, who's in Maidstone. Hi, David.
Hi, Penny. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for calling in. Do you have faith that this can be sorted?
I just think, to be honest, the whole thing needs a real look at what's going on. I mean, when suddenly some of the callers call in and say, oh, you just stopped the boats mid-channel. How do you tell me how you stop a boat that doesn't want to be stopped? There's only one way, and that's sink it. And that's why the Navy gave up. Yeah. I haven't got experience. The first time I come across any migrants in the Channel, because I've got a fishing boat in Dover. So I'm out most weekends fishing in the Channel, in the area, in the Straits of Dover, where the thing has come across. And I've been watching this for the last 5 or 6 years. Now, the first ones that we came across was May 2019. And we were fishing in the shipping lane on a wreck called the Texaco Caribbean. I could see in the distance some orange bobbing about in the water, and it was moving very slowly. So we thought, we've got to go and investigate. So we went across there, come up to this 12-foot dinghy. There were 8 children in this dinghy, 3 pregnant women and 2 men.
Mm-hmm.
The fear in those children's eyes, I will never forget to the day I die. They had been in that boat for at least 7 hours. This was at 6 o'clock in the morning. So they left at 11 o'clock at night in the dark, crossed the French shipping lane in the dark to get, and they were the middle of the downward English side of the shipping lane. And this was 6 o'clock in the morning. Now, we were with them for 2.5 hours because before the border force really got their act together in the lifeboat, and they couldn't decide who was going to come out and sort these. And the protocol is you don't get them on board, which we didn't. We stayed alongside. And all I know is when I saw those children there, they were not going to drown.
Yeah.
They're human beings, you know what I mean? They're children. And we were asking them, what possesses you to be here? Because I think of my son, with my grandchildren, my daughter, my grandchildren, what would possess them to put them in that dinghy to make that crossing across the channel? Because it's so, that is just unbelievably dangerous. And they said to us, before we got rid of Saddam Hussein, this is our politics calls this, there was law and order in Iraq. He was a bad man. But he kept peace. There were businesses, there were hospitals, we were safe. Now, we've gone in there, taken him out, and we just walked away from it, and there's just warring factions. And we've done the same in Afghanistan. And they said, now this is a lawless place, with warlords going around raping the women, shooting the children. This is no plan. We would sooner risk our lives getting to give these children an opportunity than stay where we were in Iraq.
Yeah.
And all we've been doing, politically over the last 5-6 years is sticking plasters over a gap. Rather than it's like driving along the road and get a puncture every day in the same place and just repairing the punctures, and that's all we're doing. We have to look at the reasons that these people are coming and address them. It's the only economic sense, it's the only sense. Look at the reasons they're coming, because the problem is we've got is with global warming, there are places in the world that can become less and less habitable. This problem is going to get worse and worse and worse. And we're dealing with desperate people that don't think like you or I. Their life and death is part of their daily lives anyway. So they're used to taking those sort of risks. And when you're dealing with people that are so desperate, you need to have a look at why they're doing it.
You make some very good points there, David. And I think you're right, because we know that there are going to be more people who are going to be displaced, whether it is through changes in the environment or whether it's conflict, which is on the rise.
Yeah.
So you're right. We've got to think upstream. But I think one of the powerful points you made, Dave, was really about, people who say you just push boats back or slash the boats. You're a mariner. You understand how.
See, there's a golden rule at sea. Mariner. Yeah. And the French law stops the French police dealing with. Once they're on the water, they're on the water. And French law prohibits the French police from doing anything about it. Because once you're at sea, you're at sea.
Yeah.
And everyone knows at sea, I know. It's an unforgiving place. The Mother Nature has no conscience. She will take your life as soon as look at you.
Yeah.
And mariners have this rule of thumb. And even at war, mariners still save enemy mariners' lives.
Absolutely.
It's just the way it is. That is the way it is. It's the unwritten law. You know what I mean? And it's easy to say, I'll just do this and that. The practicality is very, very difficult.
That's very, very powerful, David. And you're right. I always say to politicians who are suggesting just slash the boats to bits, if you're relying on someone else watching a child drown, your policy is going to fail. Powerful point, Dave. Thank you so much for calling in. We're going to John now, who's calling us from Paris. John.
Hi. Yeah, so I've always, the political class, as your last caller kind of hinted, feeds people with, you know, terrible ideas, you know, turning boats around, which doesn't work, deporting people. You cannot forcibly deport people to a different country unless that country gives you paperwork to take people back. So my idea would be, as we saw with Kabul, English, you know, Afghanis with refugee status, asylum status, they just popped over for holidays in a country they said they couldn't live in. We see that with the Ukrainians. They claim they cannot live in Ukraine, but they go back for Christmas holidays and to see family in Ukraine. So my view would be, why not, and I think it would be legal, to say to refugees, we'll give you refugee status, but in return, you cannot return back to your homeland. And today, in 2025, passport data is all biometric in every single country, poor countries included in Africa. And flight data, passenger data is widely available to governments. So with AI, you can see where people pop back to whichever country they claim they cannot live in. And then if they go back, you return them back to their homeland. And I think that would put a lot of, you know, fake, bogus asylum claimants, refugee claimants, off coming back to Britain.
That's an interesting point, John. So you're thinking it could be, for some people, a deterrent to them actually claiming asylum in the UK.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we've had quite a few texts on this as well. One from Richard in Oxford, who he's talking about a similar theme to John, but he's saying that this is just going to cost us an enormous amount of money, creating whether it's returns agreements or agreements with those nations that people couldn't return, as John was suggesting. And he thinks the bill is going to be too high for that. I'm going now to Keith in Causton. Hi, Keith.
Hello, Penny. First of all, it's a great honour to speak to you. You're one of my political heroes.
Oh, thank you, Keith. That's very kind.
Right. Secondly, I actually believe this problem is far more simple than people make out, in so much as, and I hate to cite the French President Emmanuel Macron, as he said, Britain is too attractive to asylum seekers or whatever terminology you wish to use. Most of these people have travelled through Europe in relative safety and chosen to carry on to the shores of the UK because they know that they will receive more help, more benefits, probably a more favourable legal reception than they would receive elsewhere. Take that away, and going back, the gangs will no longer be able to advertise, oh, it's a great life in England. You're going to get the same level of treatment as you would receive in Italy, Spain, France. And it takes away the impediment to come to Britain.
So, Keith, are you suggesting that if we're just a nastier place to live, that people will be deterred from coming here? Are you talking about sort of specific things, maybe sort of access to services or benefits or healthcare?
No, what I'm saying is there should be a consensus among the countries affected by this, which is us and Europe, etc., etc., that there is that if you apply for asylum, the terms of asylum will be the same in each country. That way, nobody is going to fight their way across Europe. By all means, get a fund going to deter it further elsewhere. But there's been videos made by these gangs showing people what a wonderful life there is in England. And to me, that's it's obvious. If you were offered a flat in Belgravia or a flat in the middle of a slum in an underdeveloped town somewhere in the UK, what would you take?
Yeah, I think there's other things though, isn't there, Keith, about Britain, why people want to come here, some of the opportunities, perhaps because we got English as our language, and people are perhaps more likely to know that than say French or Italian. There'll be other reasons why people perhaps want to come here, don't you think, other than necessarily sort of the housing they might be in or the benefits they might have?
I think that's a large part of it, Penny. And going back to what the gentleman said before me, what does it take to make you risk the lives of young children? If you knew you were going to get no more favourable treatment or the same treatment in the country you were leaving, to cross that stretch of water in the middle of the night with oil tankers going either way, would any sane person do it?
Yeah, good point, Keith. Thank you very much. We've had a very interesting discussion about this morning. I think the general consensus is that people are disappointed with what's been done to date. They're a bit cynical, but they're keeping their fingers crossed that someone can sort this out. And no doubt many shows to come will be still talking about this issue. But it does play into a wider issue, which is what I want to talk about next. Is our inability to get to grips with the small boats becoming a totemic issue for the general state of the country? Have we lost our ability to get things done, to get things to work? Is Britain still a capable nation? And if not, why not? That's what I want to talk to you about next. Do give us a call. But right now, it's time for the news with Thomas Watts.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, Nigel Farage has accused Britain and France of effectively colluding to help migrants cross the English Channel. The Reform UK leader has been setting out his plans to overhaul human rights law and carry out mass deportations of asylum seekers. Ministers have described the proposals as unworkable gimmicks. Mr. Farage has claimed Reform's approach could save hundreds of billions of pounds.
The only way we will stop the boats is by detaining and deporting absolutely anyone that comes via that route. And if we do that, the boats will stop coming within days.
A housing minister has rejected claims of hypocrisy over Angela Rayner's purchase of a flat near Brighton. Matthew Pennycook's confirmed the Deputy Prime Minister will pay a double rate of council tax on the property. She also has a constituency home in Greater Manchester and a Grace and Favour flat in central London. Police in the Australian state of Victoria are looking for a man they say is heavily armed and dangerous. He is wanted in connection with the deaths of two police officers in the small town of Porepunkah, nearly 200 miles from Melbourne. They were shot dead while carrying out a search warrant. Protests have been taking place across Israel to call for a hostage release deal with Hamas. Police say major roads are now reopened after they were blocked by demonstrators from the Hostages and Missing Families Forum. LBC's correspondent Blake Sifton has more details from Tel Aviv.
We've already seen this morning protesters blocking major highways around the country. There's been protests outside of ministers' homes, and it's all expected to culminate tonight with another massive protest in central Tel Aviv. During the last nationwide protest on August 17th, hundreds of thousands of people, and organizers said 500,000 people, attended that nighttime protest. So we do expect another round of massive demonstrations.
Transport for London is rolling out a campaign targeting so-called headphone dodgers. Posters are being rolled out on the Elizabeth line, urging passengers to avoid playing music or taking calls out loud. They will also be put up on the tube and buses in the coming months. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was down 48, 92.73. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, feeling very warm in eastern parts of the UK, but elsewhere a mixture of sunshine and showers. As a high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Penny Mordaunt.
Welcome back. You're listening to Penny Mordaunt on LBC, standing in for James O'Brien until 1 o'clock. Now, we've been having a very interesting discussion this morning about small boats. Can anyone do anything to stop them and sort this problem out? And what I want to talk to you about next is whether this is becoming a symbolic issue for us being a capable or not nation. And we're going to be also getting some updates from Nigel Farage's press conference. Natasha Clark, who's LBC's political editor, is down there getting all the news for you, and we'll be bringing you that as soon as we can. But I want to know not just what you think about these issues, I want to know how you're feeling about them, because I think it's very important that we have confidence as a nation in our ability to get things done. And to be honest, when you look at the papers today, you've had small boats, but you've also had bad news about a whole raft of things we don't seem to be able to get to work as we'd like. Disappointment everywhere. And I know there's frustration, there's anger, there's dismay about a whole raft of issues that governments of every hue and Whitehall don't seem to be able to get to grips with. Have we lost the plot? Are we capable of getting anything done? Most people aren't members of political parties. They don't really care what the colour of government is, even though they might vote at elections. They just want stuff to work. And I think people are losing faith in our ability to do that. We had some calls earlier this morning about our armed forces when we were talking about policing the channel and how people are disappointed that they're not the strength that they used to be. There's stories in the paper today about the NHS. And when we do polling on the NHS, we know it's one of the things that people are most proud of about in this country. But we know that that universal health service isn't particularly universal and hasn't been for some time. People are disappointed in how that is actually working. We've got stories today about enormous numbers of people going on to benefits in the last year. London, believe it or not, was second only to Moscow in terms of the numbers of people who invest in this country, high-value individuals leaving this country, and applications from Brits to gain residency elsewhere in the world was up over the last 12 months by 57%. And there is a feeling, you'll have heard it on things like people's behaviour on trains and all sorts of other things we've been discussing on LBC over the last few days, that the social contract is somehow broken, that we don't take care of each other anymore. And when we try and step up and fill the gaps, sometimes not just metaphorically, potholes, for example, we find that our agency is being removed. We can't seem to be able to do those things. There's bureaucracy that stops us or discourages us from doing that. And we always used to be a nation that did take responsibility, step up, take responsibility for things, believed in rewarding people that took responsibility. And it's not just our foes that are criticising us. It used to be the case where it was just people like Russia that used to have a pop at how poor we were as a country. Now it seems to be our allies too. America, for example, it's had a pop at us on migration, on law and order, on free speech. Is our greatest ally writing Britain off? Maybe that's a reason why people show flags, that they want to be proud of the nation again, that they want to be proud of the things that they think that flag embodies, the values, being effective, having agency, being capable, being Great Britain. So how are you feeling about our abilities to change? I want to know what you think and how you're feeling. You can call or WhatsApp us on 0345 6060973 or ping us a text on 84850. Just for the record, folks, I do think we're still a capable nation. And I still have great pride in our abilities. I think that's very important. The American philosopher Richard Rorty said, national pride is to countries what self-respect is to individuals. It's a necessary condition for self-improvement. And one of the things I worry about is if we start to lose our confidence that we can actually do things, for example, tackle the small boats crisis or get potholes filled in or get the NHS to be all we want it to be, then we'll lose our ability and motivation for trying. So I think pride is so important in getting us back to being a capable nation. And of course, we've heard all this before. People have written us off time and time again, written us off before Agincourt, before the Spanish Armada, in facing Napoleon, in facing the Nazis, Dunkirk, when Churchill came to power, when Margaret Thatcher came to power, when Margaret Thatcher left power. So many things, including Brexit. And we've proved everyone wrong. We've proved all the cynics wrong. Are we still capable of doing that? How are you feeling? That's what I want to know this morning. Give us a call, WhatsApp us, or send us a text. We're going now to Anne from Boston. Anne, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Morning, Anne. How are you feeling about the country?
Completely fed up. I think you've hit it on the head. People are resentful, especially of the migrants and things, because of the have-nots that we haven't got now and the things that are not working now. You know, if you look at even the universal credit, that was all changed to stop the fraud. And yet there's more fraud than ever. Nothing works in this country.
Well, and why do you think that is? Why do you think that we can't seem to get things done? Because we were really known for it, weren't we?
Yeah. I mean, when the HS2 was quoted for in the first instance, why is those figures not the figures that it ends up being? You know, if you get a quote for your house, they don't come along and say it's going to be three times as much, do they? Nothing seems to be, working, and it's embarrassing. People, I would say, are embarrassed that this country can't produce proper trains. There is nothing working. The NHS isn't working. Nothing is working properly. So we're feeling fed up. And I think that's half what the problem is to do with the migrants and things. You know, we're taking the anger out on them.
Yeah. And when did you last feel proud about your country? It might be something going on locally. It might be something nationally.
I'm afraid it was in Maggie Thatcher days, I'm afraid.
And what made you proud about the country then?
Because we had a pride somehow. We had a pride. Things were working. Everything seemed to be okay. She stopped all the strikes that were going on. And things were looking up. And this is the mood of the country now, There's nothing to look forward to. There's nothing to go to work for. What's the point? When the government, not your government or their government, but any government, spend it elsewhere. They're spending it everywhere, frittedly, you know, wasting it on things. And that's such a bad incentive for going to work.
Yeah. She told a bit of a story as well, didn't she? She connected people to the country. She gave people a financial stake, but she also, I think perhaps more importantly, made them feel that they were part of something bigger.
Exactly. And even though under her, my mortgage went up to about 18%, she still took the country up. We all had an upbeat feeling, you know, and that's gone. And I don't know how we can get it back at the moment. But nobody seems to be, you know, if there are brainy people within a party, they have to toe the line. So they can't step out of the line. Yeah. Do you see what I mean? So if we've got any good people in there, in either Labour or Conservative, then where are they? And if they can't put their head above the parapet, how are we ever going to get out of this mess?
Yeah. Well, I think part of the way of solving it, Anne, is for people to have your attitude. So thank you very much for calling in and reminding us what good looks like. We're going to Chris now, who's calling us from Leighton Buzzard. Hi, Chris.
Oh, good morning. Good morning. I hope you're well.
I am. Are you?
Yes, not too bad. Not too bad.
Are you upbeat about the nation, or you think we're going downhill?
If I'm completely honest, we were only discussing this yesterday at dinner. I've actually turned round. I'm very much a royalist. I'm very patriotic. And I've turned round to my son. He's only 10. I said, as soon as you're old enough, if things don't improve, you leave. You go where? Somewhere else. I said, because the education system's broken. The NHS is broken. I know it's not just this government. It's probably the government before that, the government before that. But as an individual that loves this country, immigration obviously is a massive thing. I can't see my son getting a house, getting a job, and I can't see it. I've lost all faith in the people that are supposed to look after us, and all they're doing is looking after everybody else. They're not interested in us. We pay our taxes. And now they're talking about adding more taxes and more of this. People haven't got the money, and people have had enough of what's going on with all the flags and everything else. I think people are starting to stand up and say, hang on a minute, we now need to start looking after the people that are already here. You know,
Chris, why do you think, because you're describing the government of, you know, and previous governments being detached from real life, from your needs and the needs of your neighbourhood. Why do you think that is?
I wish I could give you an answer on that. I just think it's, they're not listening. Obviously, we need to all come together. It doesn't matter what race, religion or what, but we need to come together and work together instead of helping other people. I'm not being disrespectful to the people that are coming over in the boats. Don't let them come over. It's a horrible thing to say, and it is, but we've got enough people in this country. We're only tiny. You know, they're going to build 1.5 million houses. If you look at it honestly, you know, there's been 30-some-odd thousand this year. If there's 30-some-odd thousand next year. By the time my son is 20, that's 300,000 more people coming into a little island.
Yeah. Chris, when did you last feel really proud about the nation? When did you think we sort of knocked it out the park?
If I'm honest, with COVID, I'm a gardener, and I noticed during COVID how much people helped each other. How much people looked out for each other. You know, you're helping your elderly neighbours. Didn't matter what creed, colour, race or whatever, people work together. But now, obviously, austerity and everything else, people are just feeling so enclosed. And then, right, you know, I'm self-employed. Worked this year, no offence to Labour government, since they've been in power, work has come down. Because people haven't got disposable income anymore. I'd like to go to the pub, but I can't go to the pub. So the pubs are shutting. And it all has a knock-on effect. But until governments start listening to what people have to say, it's not going to change.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris. Sorry to hear your downbeat, but really appreciate your views. It is 11:18. You're listening to Penny Mordaunt on LBC.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the all-new LBC app. Download it for free from the App Store.
Combine your pensions with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
You sound happy.
I've just spotted tuna in the fridge, and it's got my name all over it.
Well, be careful. It's a long way up.
Relax. We're insured, aren't we?
Nope. That's not what I've heard.
Because you never know what little pickles will get themselves into. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Seriously, we're not insured.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
Penny Mordaunt on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Welcome back. It's 11:19. I'm Penny Mordaunt and you're listening to LBC. We've been talking this morning about, are we a capable nation? We've been speaking about small boats, but we've been speaking about the state of the NHS, all sorts of things that don't seem to work in our country as a national level and a local level, and our ability on the international stage. When was the last time you felt proud about our nation and thought we were doing really well? That's what we're discussing in the next hour. I'm going now to Nathan, who's calling us from Heathrow. Hi, Nathan.
Hello.
Hi. How are you feeling about the nation? Do you think we're still capable, or do you think that we're in decline?
I think we can be, and I think we definitely are in decline, like a lot of other countries in Europe and America, unfortunately. But I don't think it's in the way that people typically think about it, which is what upsets me. I've recently graduated from the Uni of Kent with a bachelor's in philosophy and politics. So I hope to be a little bit more, a little bit different, I suppose.
Well, you're fully qualified to have arguments with people as a philosophy graduate. Exactly. I would say that. So tell me what you think should be the different approach to this.
Well, I think what we've sort of stumbled into nowadays is a society in which, like, I think whoever was on before, talking about middle-class guilt and the working class are looking around, they're angry at the immigration situation. I think it's a sad state of affairs that when we're addressing problems in the country, our first thought is to shout at those that are more desperate than us and not to look upwards and think about who's actually ransacking the country for all it's worth.
So you think that in all of this debate, we've lost sight of the human beings behind this situation. Is that what you're saying?
I think yeah, somewhat. I mean, first of all, I think migration is just not as big of an issue. I'm not saying it's not an issue at all, but I'm saying it's not as big of an issue as people would have you believe. It's not this this key to solving all the problems in the country. If we were just to stop the small boats, then suddenly everything would be perfect and we'd be back in the Thatcher era, which I'm not sure would be amazing.
Cost of living is always top issue for the public.
Exactly, yeah.
So you think that people would feel happier if we were focused on those sorts of issues? And so why do you think people are focused on the migration issue? Why it's such a big lightning rod for people?
Unfortunately, I think it's the same reason that people have been focused on cultural issues throughout political history forever, really. It's easy to make a scapegoat of those around you.
So it's sort of a displacement activity. It's a displacement activity, is it?
Yeah, so I think it's just very easy. It's a very easy thing to turn around and think, oh, well, I don't like how everything's going. I think I'll just blame the person next door, or I'll blame the people that are more desperate than me in a lot of cases, and not look at if everyone in the working class and the middle class is struggling, who isn't struggling? Is the question. Who isn't struggling? Because if they're not struggling, and if the rich are getting richer and richer and richer, while we struggle and while the cost of living goes up and while people no longer have any disposable income, who are the ones that are flourishing?
Thank you, Nathan. Nathan's focusing on, he thinks we're focusing on the wrong issues, and that's why we're not being a capable nation. I'm going now to Barry in Croydon. Hi, Barry.
Hello, good morning to you. Can I just identify some of the causes in living memory, why the country's in the situation it's in, and possible at least one or two possible solutions? A lot of it, unfortunately, Penny, is your party. If you go back to about 1981... When we had lots of North Sea oil coming in, what did your government do? They sold off our North Sea oil assets for a pittance. Norway didn't do that. Norway instead created a sovereign wealth fund, which is one of the biggest in the world. And consequently, if you're born in Norway, you've virtually won the lottery before you've got out of your nappy. And then coming a little bit more also, the housing crisis. Mrs. Thatcher sold off council homes and told most local authorities you're not really allowed to build new ones. You have to use that money for other things. So that, over time, created a housing crisis. And then, obviously, Brexit is costing this country anywhere around about £90 billion a year, roughly, whereas immigration actually contributes around about £83 billion to this country, which you guys and also in the media hardly ever raise.
So I knew, Barry, when Anne and I were talking earlier on about Maggie, that I would have triggered somebody out there and clearly have with you. But not dismissing your point, Barry, but it was Thatcher was around a long time ago, and we've had governments of several hues between now and then. But how are you feeling now? We've got a Labour government in. How are you feeling now about our ability and our capability as a nation? Does Whitehall fill you with confidence, or do you think we've just lost it?
I mean, I'd rate Labour so far somewhere between 6 and 7 out of 10. They're trying to invest in the regions with new public transport schemes, trying to connect people so they can get to jobs and education. And obviously that's going to take time. I mean, we can rebuild the NHS if we keep your party and reform out, because in 2010, people forget, the NHS... patient rating of the NHS, people's perception was that it was a world-class organisation back in 2010. It can be again, but it's going to take a dozen or so years to do that if Labour and maybe the Greens can work together in the next couple of parliaments, but that's a huge if. The polls don't show that at the moment, unfortunately.
Barry, I'm gonna take away from your call that you're an optimist, you still think that we're a capable nation and you believe in democracy, and those are things that I can agree with you on, if not the great lady herself. But I really want to get a final call in before we go to the news, and this is Ibrahim, who's calling from Woking. Ibrahim.
Hi there.
Hello.
Good morning, Penny. Hi. Echoing a lot of things that the previous caller has said. I've been in this country for 50 plus years. I came here as a refugee, built from scratch, basically. Very little mm-hmm. that we came with. And here we are 50 years later, kind of going through what we'd gone through then. The situation is much worse now. The outlook is very, very difficult, generally speaking, I think. I'm not a pessimist by nature, but I think I can see that the situation, you know, we've got to work. And I think the focus of the country has got to be the youngsters who are growing up, who are coming out of university, who are going into work, trying to build a career for themselves. It's just going to be 100% on them. What can we do to make their tomorrow better? And that's where we've got to be. We've got the basic, I think, the understanding between the peoples of different, you know, different cultures, etc. We just need to build on that and work together to try and do what we can to achieve a better future, because I think that's where the crux is. You know, I'm 60 plus now. I think I tell my kids and my grandchildren, I've got four grandchildren, that, you know, it is all about them. They have to tell us what their issues and problems are, and we need to work as a country to see where we can and how we can, what we can do. It's going to be about hard work. You know, you've been in government, you know that money is very, very, and we can all scream about, you know, not enough is being done here or there, but there is a limitation. We've reached that limit. It's how you balance it now to try and do what we can for the future generations. Yeah.
So listening to future generations, of course, they're facing all kinds of problems. Our generations didn't have to, with social media and all sorts of additional pressures. But what gives you confidence that we can tackle these issues? Because you sound like you're proud of the country, you think we're capable, but where does that stem from?
It stems from the people, really. I mean, working with people. I've worked with so many people from so many different walks of lives, seeing that there's so much hidden talent in this country. You know, if somebody said to me, what have you learned? I've learned that there are so many good, bright people in this country. And by bright, I don't mean educated necessarily. People who've got it in them to do better but are not able to do it because the roots just aren't there. You know, they're not. I think we haven't got the mechanics in the country to be able to get, you know, the right people in the right kind of environments to be able to come out fully and do what they can best for the country. You know, they kind of end up in a dead end job, or they end up with you know, something which is totally not what they're capable of doing. So I think that gives me a lot of confidence that people are there, the systems are there, the attitudes are there. I think, you know, everything is there, the culture, the history, absolutely everything's there. It's just got really bogged down in issues which I think are, you know, we've got to realise. I mean, I realise personally, for me, things are not going to get better.
Yeah.
You know, I've got an issue with me at the moment, a health issue. 6 months to see the first person in the NHS, and then potentially another 6 months or a year after that. But that's where I am. You know, I'm just part of the system. I'm not kind of giving up. I'll keep trying, but I know where I stand at the moment. There are many, many more urgent cases to be dealt with, and so that's, you know, in my mind, it's kind of, but yeah, that's by the by. I think it's all there. It's just that national pride to get us all together again on the same, pardon the pun, but on the same boat.
Yeah, that I think that is absolutely key to it. Well, good luck with your health issue. I hope you're okay and get what you need soon. But I think you've reminded us we still have a lot to be proud of, and it's that togetherness, isn't it? And pulling together and feeling that we're part of something bigger that keeps us going. Well, but do you agree with Ibrahim? Do you think that we are still a capable nation? Do you think that that potential just needs to be released and we can still pull our weight and get things sorted, get our public services where they need to be, as we're still dealing with the catch-up from COVID. That's what I want to hear from you in the next half hour. Are we still a capable nation? You're listening to Penny Mordaunt on LBC. The time is 11:32 and it's time for the news with Tom Watts.
Nigel Farage has warned of a genuine threat to public order without further action to tackle illegal migration. The Reform UK leader says his party's policies would stop small boat crossings of the English Channel within days. Large crowds have gathered across Israel to call for a deal with Hamas to release the hostages remaining in Gaza. Several major routes were blocked by demonstrators earlier this morning. Five Metropolitan Police officers have been arrested over their handling of an internal investigation. They are being questioned in connection with allegations of sexual assault made against another officer. LBC weather, a mixture of sunshine and showers for many, feeling very warm in the east, a high of 26 degrees.
LBC.
The Harwoods upgrade event starts on the 4th of September. Upgrade your car with our bespoke offers to a new 75 registration at Harwoods Audi Southampton and Portsmouth, or a premium used model at Harwoods Assured Chichester. Find out more at harwoods.co.uk. But don't delay. The event ends Sunday the 7th. Harwoods, family owned since 1931.
The advert looked genuine. A post from a household name, experts in money, a hot opportunity. They asked for a small amount, promised a great return, took all I had, and then disappeared. Investment scammers are highly sophisticated, and every month, CEL talk to thousands of people like you who've fallen victim. Our experts can help recover your money, so head to celsolicitors.co.uk today.
CEL. So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary. Terms apply.
This is LBC with Penny Mordaunt. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 11:34. You're listening to Penny Mordaunt on LBC. Now, after midday, I want to turn our attention to the hospitality sector. This is a sector we have learned from a survey coming out that has been absolutely clobbered over the last 9 months and lost 90,000 jobs. And I want to hear from you if you're in that sector and how you've been finding things. But I also want us to think about the wider implications for the jobs market, because the kinds of jobs that have been going from the hospitality sector are the sorts of jobs that often give people their first foot on the job ladder. They're also the kinds of jobs that people who've got additional challenges getting into work, for example, they might have a learning disability, often find are a really good environment to work in. And so I want us to think about the wider implications. So if you are the owner of a hospitality business, or you're one of the organisations that is trying to get people who are furthest from the jobs market into work, I want to hear from you. But back to our current topic. Have we lost the plot, or are we still a capable nation? I'm going to Neil now in Nottingham. Neil, what do
Hi,
you think?
Penny.
Are you an optimist?
I'd like to be, but I think if we're honest, if we look back through the history of politics in this country, we've sort of always staggered from almost one crisis to another. I don't think there's ever been a golden period where we've been able to plan. But what I do think is there have been periods where we had a better collective view, if you like, of what our underpinning values and judgments were. And I wonder whether part of what sits behind the problems in lots of areas is that collectively we've lost the confidence to make value judgments. You could argue that perhaps one of the downsides of our form of democracy over a long time, and don't get me wrong, I'm a big supporter of it, is that we've become almost obsessed with trying to do good in all areas all the time. And therefore, it's very difficult for us to actually take a step back now and say, well, hold on a minute, we've got to make a value judgment. This bit is more important than that. Not everyone can be happy all the time, but what is it that will serve the greatest good? And as we fracture more and more and people become more and more almost in their individual silos, that tendency gets harder and harder and harder. So, you know, when I was young, and I'm 60-odd now, there were certain things, I guess, that fell out almost as natural values, things that had to be done, things that people had to subscribe to.
Can you give us an example, Neil, of that? When did you feel that responsibility we had towards each other?
One example maybe that goes to something you were talking about before was the whole issue, let's say, of the EHCR and that side of things. People find it very difficult, I think, now to understand when they look at some of the judgments that they're taken, and the particularly the point about human rights, how it is that human rights, as they are now defined, if you like, or as they've become to be defined as time's gone on, how individual human rights in quite extreme situations can trump the rights of the collective majority. So people look at some of the decisions that are taken, I think, and there are any number of examples, and they will say to themselves, well, somebody here, a decision has been made on the basis of somebody's right to life, if you like. And yet the other side of that coin you can see is that that right impacts a lot more people in a negative way. But why and when did we get to the stage where collectively we now feel that the balance of that decision should be so far skewed to those individual rights that the majority, if you like, suffer as a result?
Yeah. It's sort of people, JFK, isn't it? It's don't ask what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Possibly, but I just think collectively we've become almost paralysed to be able to make decisions. We've become so scared that because when you try and make decisions, there are going to be people who are unhappy at any point in time, that we've lost sight of, if you like, what the majority value and why.
And how
and
do you
we're
think?
Incapable.
How do you think we can get that feeling back, Neil?
I think we've got to get back to being honest about what some of those values actually are, and we've got to be on it. Part of that, is the whole issue, let's say, of free speech. Free speech is a very important value, and it's the one that politicians, you know, will trip off their tongue. Well, of course, believe in free speech. And the issue there for me is less about, you know, the individual arguments about can individuals say hatey words and all the rest of it. The issue is that collectively, we have moved away from being able to have in open public debate difficult conversations that need to be had. So, for instance, the whole point about migration that you were talking about before, it's a very fractured, polarized debate. We're incapable as a nation of taking a step back and looking at it through, for instance, the perspective, let's say, of risk management. Yeah. So the upsides and the downsides, it's a polarized debate now, based on individual little bits of it, you know, migrants are good for the economy or they're not or whatever. But we've moved away from actually saying, well, let's have a factual debate on this. Let's have a look at all the dimensions that are affected by mass migration and let's be honest about what it means. And then when we're honest and we've got a picture, let's make some value judgment. What is actually more important than something else, bearing in mind that not everyone is going to be happy? So,
yeah,
for instance,
you're right, Neil. I mean, I think free speech is fundamental to that. It's a very popular thing here at LBC. Thank you for that. I want to move to Jess from Newham. Jess.
Hi. Hello.
Hi, Jess. How are you feeling about the nation?
You know what? If I'm honest, it's quite a sad situation that we're in because it feels a bit like a lost cause, not right now. What I mean by that is, it feels like doesn't seem to be a direction that anyone can agree on that we are going to get any improvements in the way we live, whether it be NHS or migration or immigration, whatever it is. We don't actually we don't seem to have anybody in agreement. And I think my biggest problem, and something that I haven't heard mentioned, is the government or our lack of faith in the government. Me personally, and my sons also, who are like 19 and 20, they have no faith in the government. They think it's laughable that my parents, you know, still listen to the government, still respect the government, still vote. They think that it's all a bit of a joke.
And why is that, Jess? Why do you and your sons feel
that
way?
Me, Me personally, I don't think the government... I'm very proud to be from a country that even has a government that has any form of control and, you know, not, you know, crazy like a lot of other countries, you know. So I'm not saying that we have a bad government necessarily, but I don't trust the politicians. I don't believe that when they say this is how it's going to be on Monday and this is what you need to do and this is what we're going to do, and then by the next day you're hearing that they haven't done any of that. COVID, perfect example.
Yeah.
We were all told how to live, all told what to do, and then just constant for the next couple of years we're finding out all the things that they didn't do, everything they told us to do, you know, they didn't do the same. So I don't trust our government, not necessarily our politicians individually.
Yeah.
But I don't really believe that when they say this is what we're going to do, we're going to raise taxes, your money's going to go into exactly where it should go, we're going to use it wisely. I don't believe that. And it's very hard when...
What would it take, Jess? What if you could wave a magic wand and the Prime Minister or another politician was to do something to restore your faith and to get you and your sons more optimistic about the future, what would that have to look like?
Oh, wow. Where would we even start? I think it would be a matter of... They say what they do. So if they say, this is where... Like, if I was given a list of every... If I was told, okay, out of your... This is just an example. Out of your £1,000 a month, out of the £200 taxes that we take, this is where it goes. We're going to spend £50 on this, £20 on this, £30 on this. If I was given a clear breakdown of everything that was sent to wherever it was, if I was given an option to say, would you like your taxes to go towards the NHS? Or do you want to pay privately? You know, like just little things like that. Like, I think given a bit more free, given a bit more control over what is done with our funds, rather than just saying we want more money from you, I understand raising taxes is necessary sometimes.
I think that's a great idea, Jess. And I also have long thought that we ought to have, you know, some way of showing to every household, you know, if we've got investment into the country and the country's doing well, what that means in disposable income for every household. Really, thank you, Jess, for that. I think that's a great idea. I want to go to Ran now, who's calling from Paddington.
Hello there, Penny.
Hi, Ran. Thanks for holding on. I know you've been waiting a bit.
That's all right. That's all right. I think I had to bite my tongue listening to some of your, you know, the people that were phoning in, some of your regular listeners. I think this country's just about had it. I think, you know, the poor mismanagement by the Conservatives kind of got us to the edge and it was all falling apart. This government has come along and basically tipped us over the cliff and there's no coming back. I think you're going to see one of the worst recessions ahead. My kids, both of them, have left the country. They left.
Where have they gone to, Ran?
One's in Canada, one's in the US, and basically they're in professional fields. I've got loads of friends whose kids are finishing med school, being lawyers. They've been offered places abroad. I mean, I keep on hearing the same thing from this government over and over again, that nobody's going to leave and it isn't going to impact. We're thinking of leaving as well. I mean, you know, we're top 5%, 1% taxpayers in this country. We're going to move. We don't want to pay the tax anymore. The government has killed IR35. You are taxed to death. There is no way back. And I think it's going to come to a head at some point where either the government get ousted or, you know, reform come in 18 months time, 2 years, whatever it is, down the road, and there's a fundamental change. And, you know, if you ask me what needs to happen, there needs to be a full audit of the government from the top down. Every single penny that is spent abroad that shouldn't be needs to come back into this country, and somehow you're going to have to lure all of the millionaires that are leaving en masse. If anybody tells you anything different, Penny, they are absolutely 100% lying. People are leaving this country in droves and shutting businesses. Yeah.
Well, I mentioned at the start, Rand, the number of people who've applied for residency in other countries, the number of Brits has gone up. It's more than doubled in the last 12 months. So I agree with what you're saying. But we've also had some calls where people are still optimistic about our capabilities and hope we can actually reach our full potential. The time is 11:46. This is LBC with Penny Mordaunt.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Angela Rayner, this is the Housing Secretary, who has continued with a Conservative policy that will mean that if you have a second home, you will have your council tax doubled. And we now hear that she has three homes.
Housing and Planning Minister Matthew Pennycook, how appropriate is it that the senior member of this government, indeed I understand your immediate boss, has three separate dwellings, Minister?
The pressures on the Angela as Deputy Prime Minister are unique. She has different residencies across the country.
Why does she need three?
Are we saying that people can't purchase second homes?
You can put your hand on your heart and say this doesn't have a bad look to you.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast, back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player and the new LBC app.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
I've dealt with many utility companies for many years across several properties, and Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Hey, Harry. Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to play BetVictor's daily free-to-play guaranteed prize wheel.
What guaranteed prizes does this guaranteed prize wheel guarantee?
The guaranteed prize wheel means you're guaranteed to win prizes, like free bets, free spins, exclusive offers and cash. Guaranteed.
What was it called again?
The guaranteed prize wheel.
Well, I guarantee I'll give it a spin.
And I guarantee you'll win a prize.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on BetVictor's guaranteed prize wheel. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. Opt in and spin the wheel. Rewards expire 24 hours after claiming. Gambleaware.org.
Thanks to a blend of petrol and electric, fill up less this summer with the self-charging Mazda 2 Hybrid Centerline. It's available to finance for £199 per month with 0% APR representative. To go further for less this summer, search Mazda 2 Hybrid. Mazda Financial Services, PCP over 48 months, deposit of 5395, optional final payment of 9833. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. See website.
The Virgin Atlantic Holiday Sale is now on. This is your sign to taste Jamaican jerk chicken so good it brings a tear to your eye. Catch a New York basement gig worth the 10-block detour. Or hit the dunes in Dubai and find sand in your pockets for weeks. Seize the sale. Book in-store or online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected routes. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Penny Mordaunt on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Hello, the time is 11:49 and we have been talking about whether we are still a capable nation. And before that, the image that has become symbolic of us not being, which is the small boats crisis. Now, as you know, Nigel Farage has been holding a press conference over at Oxford, laying out his plans about how he wants to tackle that issue. And we can go to Natasha Clark, who's our political editor, to get her to give us the lowdown on what has been said. Natasha.
Yes, good morning, Penny. Nigel Farage has this morning vowed to deport at least 500,000 people as part of his plans to tackle illegal migration. He's been delivering a major press conference here this morning at an airport in Oxford, setting out how he would do things if, and of course it's a big if, Reform wins the next election. His plans involve making it illegal to enter the UK on a small boat, to detain all those people and to deport them with no right of appeal. It would also involve leaving the ECHR, suspending international treaties for 5 years, like the Human Rights Act in relation to migration and the Refugee Convention too. Nigel Farage, speaking just a little bit earlier today, told a press conference that it was the only way to tackle the growing issue of migration.
The only way we will stop the boats is by detaining and deporting absolutely anyone that comes via that route. And if we do that, the boats will stop coming within days, because there would be no incentive to pay a trafficker to get into this country. If you come to the UK illegally, you will be detained and deported and never, ever allowed to stay, period. That is our big message from today. and we're the first party to put out plans that could actually make that work.
Now, his plans are twofold, really, today. First, to set out what a reform government would actually do if they made it into 10 Downing Street. And secondly, of course, to increase the pressure on the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer. Now, according to YouGov trackers, the most important issues facing the country, immigration has been travelling back up that league table. And some polls have it as the most important issue facing the Prime Minister today. And we know that there have been more than 50,000 small boat arrivals since Labour came to power. And last week, you remember those statistics revealing that more than 110,000 people have claimed asylum in the UK in the last year alone, many of whom had overstayed on their visas to do so. So Nigel Farage's plan today is very big, very bold. Of course, it's incredibly controversial. Many people, of course, will say that it's inhumane to send people back to countries where they could face torture and could face people being sent back to some of those countries where they may even be killed. Mr. Farage has said something needs to be done, that people here in the UK are being put at risk, he claims. He says that the British people should be prioritised first. And this, of course, is a little bit like a plan that the Tories have partly tried already to detain and to send people to Rwanda. Of course, that never fully got off the ground. But this plan is going to go further, leaving the ECHR and other treaties. And of course, it's going to face huge opposition from lawyers, from politicians, from the public. So I asked him earlier today what his message would be to those critics and how the public could finally trust him.
Every Prime Minister since David Cameron has said clearly, if you come to Britain illegally, you will be removed. And they all do it. And none deliver. Although I think they say it because they think the public wants to hear it rather than they actually mean it. The fundamental point of your question is correct. That the social contract that exists in this country between those that work and pay their taxes and those that govern them is at a very, very fragile moment. That trust in politics and trust in politicians, frankly, it's certainly never been lower in my lifetime. And I think you might have to go back a long way in history to find a parallel period. So the restoring of that trust is absolutely vital. A lot of people around the country who say they're going to vote reform believe that we're pretty much the last shot. Pretty much the last shot. That if we don't win that election and start putting in place some of the very necessary changes that are needed, then goodness only knows what this country will look like in 10 years' time. Goodness only knows how many more talented people will have left. Not just the ultra-rich, but the young, ambitious, hard-working. So it is vital that we do this. All I can say to you is there's nobody on these issues of sovereignty, on these issues of national self-interest, on these issues of predicting what would happen in the future and it coming true, there is nobody more determined to do this than me.
But of course, lots of questions are going to remain about this plan. And we are, of course, 4 years technically from an election. Where are these people going to be detained? Which RAF bases might be used? For how long? Which commercial airlines are going to... People, we know that was a problem that the Tories, how much will all of this cost? And of course, the key question, will it work? Lots of questions remaining, but Nigel Farage absolutely determined this morning that he is the person, not Keir Starmer, to tackle the small boats crisis.
Thank you, Natasha. We'll bring you more on that and responses to it later. Now back to our callers on the topic of are we a capable nation? Over to Sal, who's calling in from Paddington.
Good morning, Just.
Hi.
So the longer, if I could tie together a couple of threads, including taking on from where Mr. Farage left off, the longer he's been in politics, the less trust people have in politicians. So that's one thing. And the small boats were not even a headline item before 2016. So people seem to forget how relatively recently they began to basically fashion the nation's consciousness. I'm really worried the social contract is broken, but not just between working people and the politicians, but between society in general. all of the chickens are coming home to roost, I'm afraid, and it doesn't look very good.
So what do you mean, Sal,
by... the full lifespan of certain policies such as the privatisation of pretty much anything that wasn't nailed down, and a few things that were, be it Thames Water, be it our gas prices, be it the lack of housing stock in local councils. All of this is causing local pressure, and nationally it's just being seen everywhere.
Do you think, Sal, things like the natural monopolies of water companies and things, we've got some things that we need to wrestle with, and we've also got some new problems because the world is changing very fast, technology is changing very fast. Are you confident that we can meet those challenges? Do you think it's the politicians that are stopping us from doing that, or do you just think we're not capable as a nation?
In several areas, we're still looking at 19th and 20th century practices in a 21st century world. And we're not preparing people for the world of today, let alone the world of tomorrow. We're using education systems that hearken to basically testing people beyond good measure, as opposed to making sure that they are rounded individuals who have transferable skills. They teach to test, they learn to test. We're not actually engaging with people, and then we're wondering why people are just signing off.
Thank you, Sal. Very interesting. We can't keep pace. We've got to have massive change to ensure that we can. Going now to Nora, who's calling from the Wirral. Nora, how are you?
Hi, Penny. I'm okay, thank you. I think you're very brave to take in this slot.
It's nice to hear from you, Nora. Tell me how you're feeling. Are you an upbeat optimist, or are you applying for residency elsewhere in the world?
Sadly not. I'd hate to be an immigrant somewhere else, seeing how they get treated here. Perhaps you could mention that to the chap who wants to advise his son to go there, go away. And he doesn't like immigrants, but he wants his son to be an immigrant. Anyway, so I just feel as if quite a lot of the ills of today are down to the fact that we've got such an anti-left-wing press. Because, I mean, I don't want to make this personal, but once the Conservatives are in, everything's hunky-dory, and they never get any criticism, and people like Boris Johnson and Liz Truss and people can get in and do whatever they like and never get criticised. And yet as soon as somebody comes in who believes in making the country better, like Keir Starmer and Angela Rayner and the Labour Party, they're just slighted all the time. And it makes people feel very discontent. And, of course, once people feel discontent, they don't want to achieve anything. And it's all dissent. It's all to cause dissent. Because,
but, Laura, don't we have just an enormous number now of media outlets that give every possible take on a situation? Is it really about the press being too narrow?
Well, that could be why we've suddenly got a Labour government that just seems to be able to possibly stand the test of time, instead of just being, you know, shot down in frames whenever they suggest a tax rise to the newspaper owners. But what Keir Starmer needs to do now, Penny? He needs to stand up and fight.
Well, to coin a phrase, I wonder who said that.
Yeah, well, it was, I mean, good advice, but, you know, you said give it to the right person.
Thank you, Nora. Thank you for that. And thank you for all your calls on this important issue. There's some practical suggestions there. People ought to know more about what government is doing with their money. We ought to have a bit of transparency and buy into that. Of course, these figures are all available in the public domain, but they're just, have to go hunting for them. Generally, though, I think you're upbeat about the country. You think we're great, but we don't quite manage to reach our full potential. But I think you're the optimist marginally which I'm very happy about. After midday, we are going to be talking about a different issue. We're going to be talking about the hospitality sector. I want to hear from you if you run a hospitality business, how you've been affected, but also for those of you that are trying to get people who are quite away from the jobs market, who've got additional challenges, might have particular disabilities, for example, how particularly the issues that the hospitality sector are facing and having to cut enormous numbers of jobs there are affecting you. If you're one of those people, I really want to hear from you this morning. Thank you for your call so far. You're listening to me, Penny Morden, on LBC, and the time is now 12:02.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Nigel Farage has claimed Reform UK's illegal migration plans would stop small boat crossings of the English Channel within days. He's been setting out proposals to overhaul human rights law and deport hundreds of thousands of people. Mr. Farage says the issue has led to a deepening mood of despair and anger.
Without some trust coming back, then I fear deeply that that anger will grow. In fact, I think there is now, as a result of this, a genuine threat to public order. And that is the very last thing that we want. And I've been saying, of course, for a long time that it's a growing threat to our national security.
The government says it is getting a grip on the issue, partly through a new returns deal with France. The Housing Minister, Matthew Pennycook, has told LBC it won't be fixed overnight.
We are making progress. The first asylum seekers under that scheme have been detained. We will see removals to France in the coming weeks. But it is not the only part of our strategy. There are many other parts, several of which are not in force, as you're aware. The Borders Bill is still going through Parliament. The French authorities are still reviewing their laws to take more proactive enforcement work in shallow waters. So it's all coming through.
Protesters in Israel are holding what they're calling a day of struggle to demand a Gaza hostage deal. A number of major roads were blocked by demonstrators this morning. The Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, last week said he'd ordered immediate talks on freeing the remaining captives. Five Metropolitan Police officers have been arrested over their handling of a sexual assault inquiry. It relates to an internal investigation of allegations against a colleague. They are being questioned on suspicion of offences, including perverting the course of justice and misconduct in a public office. Two police officers have been shot dead in the Australian state of Victoria. Police say they are looking for a heavily armed suspect who fled the town of Porepunkah this morning. The officers were shot dead while carrying out a search warrant. Wayne Gatt is from the Police Association Victoria.
We still have hundreds of our members putting themselves in danger right as we speak in an attempt to conclude this situation. Our members today paid the ultimate price.
And industry figures show food prices are rising at their fastest pace for 18 months. The British Retail Consortium says costs are 4.2% higher than a year ago, up from 4% in July. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 92.74. That is down 46. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, a mixture of sunshine and showers for many. Feeling warmer in eastern areas. A high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Hey, Mum. So, you know we met Zara, my financial advisor? Yeah, from St. James's Place. Well, she drafted our plan so you can get that bungalow near me. Oh, and Sam, that lovely carer we found, will drop in. And I can bring over my signature shepherd's pie. Oi!
Big decisions call for invaluable advice. Visit St. James's Place to find your one-to-one financial advisor. St. James's Place Wealth Management PLC is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. SJP approved 19th of Feb 25.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Penny Mordaunt.
Good afternoon, I'm Penny Mordaunt on LBC. Now, in this next hour, I want to turn to a new topic, which is the hospitality sector. Absolutely key sector to our economy and one of those areas that's a real barometer for how our economy is doing. Now, UK hospitality, which is the industry body for that sector, has released some research, and it's in the papers today, and it shows that things are in a pretty dire state. the impact that the budget has had on the hospitality sector is three times worse than the Office for Budget Responsibility predicted. And what that has translated to is that over the last 9 months, 90,000 jobs have been lost. And obviously the sector's under increasing pressure, costs going up on all sorts of things, from energy to food supplies. But the major impact that has had that effect on them has been from last year's budget, and particularly the national insurance contributions. What that has meant is people have had to shelve plans to expand or take on new workers or provide new training places, and people have been shedding jobs. So I want to hear from you this morning, if you run a hospitality business or you work in hospitality, about the impact that it has had on you and your business and your plans and your ambitions. But I also want to hear from you if you are somebody who is trying to get people into work, because obviously across all sorts of sectors we've had unemployment rising. But I think that hospitality is one of those sectors that provides people with sometimes their first job at getting into work. And I think that this sector particularly is absolutely key to that. So if you are trying to get people into work, you work in the charity sector, or you work in one of those services that are trying to get people that first foot on the job ladder, I want to hear from you as well. You can call or WhatsApp us on 0345 6060973, or you can ping us a text on 84850. Now, this is a subject that's really close to my heart. I worked as Minister for People with Disabilities several years ago, and I learned so much from doing that, and particularly looking at some of the challenges people with learning disabilities had about getting into the jobs market. And I also met some brilliant people who were working to do that. There were lots of amazing training organisations, and they worked particularly with the hospitality sector, whether it was on the catering side or working in kitchens, food preparation or housekeeping. These were organisations that were prepared to take people on who maybe hadn't had a job before, maybe had some extra needs in order to stay in employment. And I just saw how key that sector was, the hospitality sector, to providing those people with opportunities. And later, I became patron of an organisation called Enable Ability, which does just that. It's a charity, but it's there to get people into work, and particularly the hospitality sector was one of the main industries that we relied on to do that, giving people the right kind of support, giving people the training to go and do that. And I know that those sorts of organisations are now in great difficulty. They've been kind of hit with a double whammy, because as charities or as little social enterprises, they're hit with all the same taxes that everyone else was hit with at the last budget, particularly bad for smaller organisations, but also all the placements that they were relying on to get people into work, they have all dried up. And what we're seeing now is quite a spike in people moving on to benefits. Another headline today is that the people on out of work benefits has gone up to 6.5 million. So that's an extra 500,000 people since that budget last year. This is just not what you want to see going on. And I think the hospitality sector is an absolute key barometer to see how things are going. I want to go to your calls now. I'm going to go to Lynn from Scarborough. Hi, Lynn. I understand you run a family B&B.
I do, Penny. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Yes, we've had it for 37 years, so I can start with complete confidence that this has been the worst year ever.
Oh, gosh. How has this affected you, Lynn?
Well, put it this way, I won't be doing any redecoration. There'll be no refurbishments done this year. I haven't been able to employ any of, well, so over 16s, say. I haven't been able to employ any adults this year because we just can't afford any more.
Oh, gosh.
Than the full-timer that I already have. Yeah, the tax burden is tremendous.
And, I mean, I can tell from your mood, Lynn. I mean, you clearly love what you do. You wouldn't have been doing it for that so long no. if you didn't. But you sound no. like you're not having fun right now.
No, it isn't. It's very stressful. I mean, as I say, we've been there for a long time. I've personally been running the business for the last 24 years. So we've seen a few recessions, you know, official recessions. I know we're in one now. We don't like to say we are, but we definitely are. People are not spending. Even from where I am, I know exactly. I can see that the day trippers have increased, but their spend has decreased. That's another issue as well. So it's not just that people aren't staying over or they're staying for less nights than they would have previously. They're also coming and not spending as much as they would do normally.
So it's not just affecting your local,
nope,
your business
it's
directly,
retail,
it's affecting the whole area.
Yeah, retail, everybody.
Yeah, and markedly so. And is it? I mean, you mentioned you can't redecorate. You can't keep on top of things as in the way that you like. In terms of jobs, have you had to lay anyone off? I mean, you mentioned you can't take on adults. You're having to take on others.
Yeah, basically, and it's kind of worrying whether I can keep the one person that works for me all year this year, and I don't think I'll be able to.
Oh dear. Oh dear. What do you want to see from the budget, Lynn?
I want VAT cuts for hospitality back down to 5%. That was such a boon for hospitality.
Yeah.
Such a boon. I mean, that, you know, that would help. Changing the levels of NI, I mean, dropping that level where we had to pay it from was the most hideous thing they could have done, along with, you know, putting it up as well. But
yes, it was a double hit, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a double whammy. Taking the winter fuel payments away from a lot of our guests, because that's the demographic, and particularly off-peak, it's older people. So if you... So, all right, they say an awful lot of people didn't need it. Well, an awful lot of people used it really well because they spent it. They didn't just stick it in the bank and save it. They thought, oh, we can have a break. We can go away.
Yeah.
So they weren't hoarding that money. It's not like they weren't putting it back into the community, because they were. And taking away that support cushion from everybody, as I think it's damaged so many businesses, it really has, even the cafes and, you know, local cafe, you still, you know, you're worrying about spending, you know, a couple of quid on a cake and a coffee.
Yeah. Have you got a traders association locally? It sounds like you're quite in touch with other local businesses.
I'm the vice president of our local association.
You sound like a woman that steps up and takes responsibility, as we were saying earlier.
They kind of speak from a position of knowledge on this. COVID wasn't this bad trading-wise. I mean, yes, we were shut, but we got government support.
Yeah.
And although we're having to pay it back, and that's part of the reason why so many of us are struggling still, we're having to pay it back. But at least they kept us afloat through the bad times. I feel like they've kind of thrown us a life ring and then they've snatched it back.
Yeah. Well, it was a sensible thing to do to keep people going, because it was expensive, but it was... much more sensible than having to everyone restart again. So, well, thank you, Lynn. Thank you on behalf of the nation for keeping going, running a small business and helping everyone else as well. Big shout out to Lynn there for stepping up and taking responsibility. The time is 12:15. You're listening to Penny Mordaunt on LBC.
This is LBC.
Tesco Finest Cod. A different kettle of fish. Pan-fried with garlic, slowly baked in butter, or finished with a squeeze of lemon. It'll get you hooked either way. It's why only the finest cuts of wild-caught cod are selected for our delicate and flaky cod loins. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland.
When we're little, we don't overthink things. We're brave, confident, we laugh and ask questions.
And play!
And play. So why stop there? Just because we're adults, it shouldn't mean we stop trying new things. For me, starting a career in early years has meant not just a new job, but new skills, new friends.
Like me.
Yes, and a new sense of purpose. All that, and I can earn while I learn.
Yay, painting next.
Do something big. Work with small children. Search early years careers to find out more.
Hey, Dad.
Hey, love. Just spoke to Zara from St. James's Place.
Your financial advisor?
Yeah, we've made a plan. Retire early, travel more. Peru first.
Ooh, ¿cómo estás?
Bless you. And Zara's plan means I can help more with your house deposit.
Thanks again, Dad.
Planning for the future calls for invaluable advice. Visit St. James's Place to find your one-to-one financial advisor. St. James's Place Wealth Management PLC is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. SJP approved 19th of Feb 25.
Penny Mordaunt on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Welcome back. It's Penny Mordaunt on LBC, and we have been talking about how the hospitality sector has been clobbered. Report out today showing that 90,000 jobs have been lost just in the last 9 months. And I want to hear how it's affecting you and also people trying to get in to work. I want to go to Lucas now, who's calling from Merseyside. Hi, Lucas.
Hi, Penny.
Hi. Now, you work in the sector with your dad, I understand.
I do.
What do you do?
So I do a bit of waitering and just general work around the restaurant while it's open and before and after, I guess.
Fantastic. And have you noticed a difference to what you're able to do as a business if you had to lay anyone off or shelve plans that you had to redevelop?
I don't think we've had to limit any staff or anything, but we have noticed a large difference, you know, with the rise of national insurance and a minimum wage. The costs just seem to keep going up every single day.
Yeah. And I mean, starting a business is a tough thing. I have to say, I ran a business, founded a business before I got into Parliament. It's the hardest thing I've ever had to do. Do you think that Whitehall and Westminster really understand that?
I don't think so at all. I don't think smaller businesses are being represented in Parliament at all.
And what would you like to see, Lucas? What do you think Rachel Reeves should be doing in the budget when it comes round?
I think Rachel Reeves needs to go to an actual local business and listen to their views on what she's been doing and how she's affecting those businesses.
So do you want to see, I mean, I'm afraid to say, I don't think tax cuts are on the card, but UK Hospitality, who's produced this report, says that it wants a cut for hospitality on VAT, which is actually what a lot of European countries do. They recognise some of the pressures the sector is under. Have you got particular things that you and your dad want to see in mind?
Oh, I can't name off the top of my head. I'm so sorry.
No, don't worry. But it would be things that are basically giving you that financial liquidity back that you could.
100%.
Would you hire more people if you could? Is that something? Are you run ragged?
I mean, if we could hire more staff, we honestly would. But with the increase in like minimum wage, it's just so difficult at the moment.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Lucas, and pass on our best to your dad for everything that he's doing. I want to go to Ian now, who's he's had a lot of business experience. Ian.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a bit about your experience? And I understand you've currently got a cafe.
Yeah, I've had about 8-10 businesses, all in catering, and I've done okay out of all of them, to be truthful. I've not had a sort of a bad egg, so to speak.
Well done.
And I've never, ever seen it as bad as it is now, not business-wise or difficult to run a business. It's impossible, absolutely impossible. So we've got, they've changed. The biggie is that when you take youngsters on or something like that, they used to be able to earn sort of 200 quid a week. And now they brought the 10,000 down to £5,000 a year. And one shift is 80 quid. So basically they work one shift and you start having to pay tax and NI on them. And then they start getting all their rights and everything. So it's very, very difficult, extremely difficult.
And how, Ian, has, because I, you know, one of the things that I see is quite often those sorts of jobs are critical to get people into work and provide training places and things that, you know, people can move on from, but a critical kind of entry level. Have you had to cut back on those kinds of opportunities? I mean, I know when I've spoken to sort of hotels, average sort of medium-sized hotel, they say those changes that were brought in is it's you know, it's three jobs, it's three training places that they've had to cut. Has that been your experience?
Without a doubt, but you don't take anyone on either. So, you know, I at the moment, as I said to you, I'm 75 and I'm still working 3 days a week. I could do with sort of, you know, not working, to be truthful with you, but I can't really, the business doesn't, can't afford to take anyone on to take me out of the business.
Yeah.
And there's another problem as well, because the VAT limit is £90,000. So after £90,000, you start paying VAT. So if you trade at £80,000, say you trade at £96,000, you've then got to pay VAT on the whole £96,000, not the £6,000 that's over the 90, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So people are, I mean, me particularly, I'm running my business at 75% of what it should be, because I don't want to go over the VAT limit.
Yes.
So there was a guy on Question Time a few months ago that said they should raise the VAT limit to 150,000 because they would lose a bit of money there, but they would gain people on the income tax if people make some money, and so they'd be paying income tax on it, so they wouldn't actually lose out. But no one seems to be able to understand this or see this.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, Ian, that when I used to be in Parliament, I used to talk to my local hospitality businesses. That was their top ask, because they were having to deliberately stay smaller than they would like to be, not to be hit by that threshold. Thank you, Ian, for everything you're doing, keeping going. I'm going now to Patrick, who's calling from Cambridgeshire. Hi, Patrick.
Hi there, Penny. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for calling in. What's your situation? Are you a business owner or working in the sector?
I've supplied to the sector in from different businesses and over the years. And I think a lot of the way that this story is portrayed is that the last 12 months, these businesses were projecting issues that are only now just becoming apparent. When I think for the hospitality sector, certainly, that the issues started back in Brexit times, when Brexit was first announced and people started leaving, going back home into Europe, and there were staffing issues. There were then issues with businesses there where they couldn't physically keep their businesses running without the staff. Fast forward a few more years, you had COVID and the way that was managed. And now there's obviously the tax increase. And I think if businesses had more money coming in from the previous issues that the country's faced, they wouldn't have been hit so hard by this now tax increase.
Those issues, I'm sure you and I could argue about Brexit and we'd probably agree a bit on COVID. But given that those things have happened, and one was the result of a democratic vote, the other was a pandemic, and there are lots of businesses carrying debt from that point. But given all of that, do you think it was helpful, the changes that were made in the budget? Because the hospitality sector itself is saying that it hasn't been, and that it wants to see some action this autumn. It wants to see a cut in VAT, and it wants to see help for the hospitality sector. What, you're a supplier to that sector, I mean, what do you think would make the difference?
I mean, a government that can see past the news story of today and go beyond the year's worth of thought process. I mean, yes, VAT cuts would help, but looking at how the hospitality sector would have been affected by that increase would have been the way to avoid this now catastrophe that they're facing. So, but again, that's not new news. It's not like this government is just doing it. And I'm not a supporter of Labour by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
Neither am I a Tory by any stretch of the imagination. I'm what you call a floating voter. I'll follow what makes sense. But nothing seems to make sense from any government making any decision about businesses for years.
And it's that's foresight in knowing where that's going to go in terms of those increases in taxes for small businesses in the hospitality sector would have been where you could have potentially, as a government, not you, but any government, could have avoided these issues that they're now living through.
So a bit more sort of foresight, a bit more experience, hands-on experience in government. Thank you, Patrick. Moving now to Dave, who's on the Isle of Sheppey. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, hello, Penny.
Hi. What's your story?
It just occurs to me when I listen to people, hospitality employers speaking and that, that they all seem to want to pay their employees the least possible money, but then they complain that there's not much money in the economy for the money to be passed back on to them, and I think that's a bit of a contradiction.
Well, I think the ideal, I guess, is you want to create an upward spiral. You want to be able to employ people. You want to be able to pay people a good wage, and then they spend money in the economy. They have more disposable income. The problem is, at the moment, Dave, all the indicators is that it's a downward spiral at the moment. Are you working in the hospitality sector, or you got experience of it, or are you just seeing this in your community?
No, I'm a prison officer myself. It occurs to me that the people at the bottom end, they have the same costs as everyone else with housing and food and heating and electrics and that. So they seem to want to pay them a subpar wage.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the jobs that have been clobbered in the hospitality sector have been those sorts of entry-level jobs. They've been at the lower paid jobs, but quite often come with training and are a bit of a stepping stone for people. So that's my worry about this, is a sort of double whammy for the sector. But obviously your point is you want people to be paying, a decent wage, a living wage.
Correct. I mean, to make an economy work, you've got to circulate some of that money, and people have got to have it to spend in the first place.
Yeah. So what do you think should happen, Dave? If you could advise Rachel Reeves, she might be listening to us this morning, what would your ask be as we go into the autumn budget?
Well, I'd like to see, instead of like the trickle-down type of economics, I'd like to see people better paid for actually working.
So to do that, they'd have to cut some taxes, I think, for businesses. I mean, I think a lot of, we heard earlier from Lynn, she's been running her business for 37 years. She probably knows her staff really well, looks after them. She struck me as that kind of person. I think by and large people want to do right by those people that they employ, but they are really up against it at the moment, I think, particularly this sector. So would you be advocating for some, I don't think it's likely, but some tax cuts?
No, I couldn't really say that. I think in this country, I know everyone complains about tax and that. No one really likes paying it, but you have to think as well of what you get for it in return. I'd sooner pay a little bit more and get better public services.
So, and I mean, you're working in the public sector. You've obviously, cost of living, everyone's having to tighten their belts, but by and large the public sector's done a little bit better than the private sector. So sure. you might have a little bit more wiggle room than others, Dave. But thanks for that. Good to get your views. We've had a lot of amazing businesses phone in. Lynn, Lucas and Ian in particular, thank you for all you're doing. We appreciate it. Small businesses are the lifeblood of our economy. More shortly, but it is now at 12:30. This is LBC with Penny Mordaunt. It's time for the news with Amelia Cox.
Nigel Farage claims Reform UK would stop small boat crossings within days of being elected. The party leader has been setting out his proposals to change human rights laws and deport hundreds of thousands of people. Protests are taking place in Israel demanding a hostage deal with Hamas. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has ordered immediate talks on freeing the remaining captives. And a man has been arrested on suspicion of murder over the death of an 87-year-old man in southeast London. He was pronounced dead at a property in Hither Green in the early hours of Sunday morning. LBC weather, rain clearing in the southeast this afternoon, leaving a mixture of sunny spells and scattered showers. These will be mostly in the north and west, a high of 26 degrees.
This is LBC.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nuthatch Adventure Park. Book now at nuthatch.com.
Sometimes in life, it can feel like you're disappearing into the crowd. We all do it. Dip below the radar. There's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes you want to find something more.
With the RAF reserves, you can break away from the crowd and find yourself with a new one, like these refugees we're delivering aid to.
And be back feeling a little different on a Monday morning.
RAF reserves Cranwell are now recruiting for spare time roles. Search RAF reserves. Find something more. Find your force.
£1.49 at McDonald's gets you a mini Oreo McFlurry. £1.49 on a big night out gets you...
Sorry, no trainers.
McDonald's Saver Menu. Actually get your money's worth. From 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
This is LBC with Penny Mordaunt. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Welcome back. The time is 12:33. We have been discussing the hospitality sector, the impact that the changes, the last budget have had on it, substantial job losses, but also very keen to hear from people who are trying to get people into work, their first foot on the jobs ladder. I want to hear from you and how that has been affecting you as well. We're going now to Alex, who's calling us from Bournemouth. Hello, Alex.
Hello, Penny.
Hi. Are you working in the sector?
Not anymore. I used to. About 5 years ago, I worked 9 years in hospitality. I worked in a restaurant as a waiter and I worked in a cinema. Unfortunately, I have disabilities, and when my mental health deteriorated to the point where I went from being able to do a uni degree and working to now being barely able to do one task in the day, I haven't been able to work.
Oh, gosh. And when were you last in work, Alex?
I think it was about 5 or 6 years ago. It was basically when I moved. I used to live in Hampshire, which is where I used to work. But since then, I haven't been able to. But I think the problem with the hospitality sector, it's always had issues for a multitude of decades. For workers specifically, there's a lot of exploitation on people on 0 hours contracts being abused, problems with pay. I think nowadays a lot more people who do minimum wage jobs are having to circumvent the additional cost of things like universal credit. I think that's why there's, 30% of people in universal credit are in full-time work.
So
I think that's an issue. And also the hospitality sector is going to suffer because the hospitality sector needs consumers, and because the general public can't spend or consume, they have nothing to feed on. So the problem is that us, the general public, do not have the funds to go out and enjoy ourselves. We don't have the time because we have to work longer and survive just to do normal costs. So,
yeah, and it's hard. It's hard work in the sector, isn't it? It's long hours. It's physically demanding. Did you have you've got a variety of employers there, but did you have any support with your condition when you were working in those places?
No, not at all. I mean, like, I guess in one restaurant, or the first one I worked in, the manager who ran it was really lovely. Like, she was really supportive. But in the bigger corporate areas, there was no support at all. There was no consideration. I was bullied. I was like used and exploited. And even in one instance, I was sexually assaulted.
Oh, Alex.
But because obviously with my mental health and my inability to speak up or have the courage, I couldn't fight back really. And it wasn't the main reason, but it did help to break me to the point now where if there was better social services, if there was better public services, if I was able to get support from society, then I might be working now. I might have been able to have the career that I went to uni to try and do. So.
Yeah. And Alex, are there any organisations in your community? I mentioned Enable Ability, which I do a bit of work with, and that's focused on people with learning disabilities. But are you in touch with any other organisations in your community that might help you, be able to help?
Yeah, I mean, I've gone to Steps to Wellbeing, which is like our local therapy centre. I have like reached out to the Dorset Recovery Centre, but because my days have been on and off, I've not been like feeling well enough to do their seminars. But I want to try and do more. Like every day I try and do more. It's not like I've just, I mean, I say I haven't just done nothing. I have for the past 3 weeks sat down and done nothing, but I do try and go to the gym. I do try and go outside. I do the things that people tell you to do to improve your mental health, but they don't go far enough because the support structures, so the NHS not being able to do enough, local communities not being able to do enough, which is mostly due to funding, in my opinion, that has been let down.
Well, thank you, Alex, for sharing with us your very personal story, and keep going, and good luck to you. But I think your call is an indication of why some of these support services are so vital. And of course, they've been hit with all the same taxes and are losing opportunities as jobs dry up. Going now to Leandro, who is in Aylesbury. Hi, Leandro.
Hi, Penny.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Yeah. Afternoon.
I was listening to the program in between my work, and I was quite surprised when you were mentioning on the other topic about immigration and how Britain is run down, how well we were doing back in the Napoleonic Wars and going through the Second World War, and then you touched the topic of Brexit as a massive achievement for this country. And going through to this topic of hospitality and mentioning as Australia started going down from the budget or since the budget, how Brexit hasn't influenced that, because it's something that is quite surprising, because everything in terms of costs for them, it went up. Competition from abroad and from other countries is still there. And I can't understand how you, as being a member for the previous government and being involved in the decision-making, are not bringing this up. I was quite surprised when this, and I'm not even involved in hospitality. I work in healthcare. But it surprised me, and I would like to have a bit more of that insight from you and to explain me how Brexit
I'd be happy to. You're supposed to be giving your views, though. But look, I rather than bore your listeners with my views, I always have at the top of my social media on my Twitter timeline a pinned tweet about the benefits of that decision, because obviously I wasn't just part of a government that implemented. I actually campaigned for Brexit, I still think it was the right thing to do. But of course I recognise it was a very tough period for business. People had to make all kinds of changes. They had certain avenues where they'd been getting labour cut off to them, people had to make those adaptations and changes. But I still think it was the right thing to do. But as I say, it was a democratic vote We haven't got a time machine, even if we, you know, wanted to go back and do it. But we've got to get the government focused on the existing situation and all the things that have happened and how we can help that sector move forward and ensure that people are still able to have those jobs and opportunities. I mean, if you, rather than rewriting history, what would your message to Rachel Reeves be as we go into the budget? What do you want to see happen?
It's not about me rewriting history, because you just said that. The history is already written, but it's like we're trying to shift, you know, the cause, the root cause of all, not all of this, but the root cause, it started there. At that decision, and of course it was a demographic vote. There was people deciding what they wanted to do, influenced rightly or wrong. It doesn't really matter for the point that we are. The fact is that we started having issues from that point on, not from you know, when the budget came in. The budget, of course, people might feel. Be affected from it. We are all feeling that. But history didn't start in 2024 at the 4th of July. It came, you know, loads of years before. The Conservative government was there for 14 years.
So you think these are legacy issues? I'd slightly disagree with you there, but thank you very much for that. I want to go to Derek now. Derek is calling us from North Yorkshire, and I think has some advice for Rachel Reeves.
Yes, good morning.
Hi, Derek.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I've always been a pub person, and I've liked the ambience of a pub. When I first started regularly drinking, pubs just did wet sales, not many did food at all. But the successive governments have treated the industry like an easy touch. Each year, a little bit more on the duty, a little bit more on VAT, a little bit more on the rates. And this all adds up. And then the killer was the minimum wage. Although I do believe it was a good in its inception, but it's now got out of hand. And I do know there's a lot of people who would work for a little bit less just so that they had a job. And it the industry is collapsing.
And you've seen this, Derek, in your local pub and in your community?
My village lost its pub last year.
Oh, dear.
And, yeah, it's sad. I've got to travel now, so I can't drink and drive, so.
Oh.
But I go to the pub. There's a lot of alcohol-free drinks to have, but it's a nice place for people to meet.
And has everyone that you used to go down to the former pub, have they gone to the new one with you? Are you still with the same gang?
A lot have just ceased going out altogether.
Oh, that's
sad. This is a silly question to you. If I put a 50 pence piece on the counter, how many pints of hand-pulled beer do you think I got for that when I first started drinking?
Oh, gosh. I don't know, Derek. I don't know. But
this is how it's gone up in price. Six pints of beer.
Oh, gosh.
I would get for that 50 pence piece.
So you want to see a reduction in duties on booze?
Just about everything.
Yeah. Yeah,
I really do. VAT, duty, and rate. And, of course, then you've got a percentage of greedy landlords who started putting their rents up. And it's been hit left, right, and centre, has the trade.
Yeah. Well,
it's a pity that, you know, there's pubs closing left, right, and centre.
Yeah. No, you're right. We are losing pubs. We're losing a lot of them. And a lot gets lost with them. They're absolutely key to strong communities, aren't they? And you're right, Derek. I mean, things like the minimum wage and the living wage, they're good things, but I do sometimes think that Whitehall forgets who actually has to pay for them. So thanks for that, Derek. Important messages. The time now is 12:45. You're listening to Penny Morden on LBC.
coming up at 1 on LBC. Asma Mia.
Reforms say they would pass legislation to enable mass deportations if they were the government. Is that likely and would it work?
Asma Mia on LBC.
31 years ago, the World Wide Web was introduced. The National Lottery launched. And Darwood and Tanner began making people smile. And whilst things have changed a lot since then, Darwood and Tanner's mission to provide the very best dental care through the very latest technology is still at the heart of everything they do. For our most comprehensive, tailored and complete dental implant, root canal and gum disease treatments, visit darwoodandtanner.co.uk.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 70 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000 to over £20,000. And with our spend and save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms and minimum spend apply.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
Zero, nada, zilch. When Vauxhall say 0%, they mean 0%. 0% APR is available now across the Vauxhall car range, including the all-new Frontera Electric. With a minimum 20% deposit and up to 4 years on offer, what's not to like? And now, for a limited time, get an extra £500 towards your new Vauxhall. Search Vauxhall to find out more. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, £500 contribution on new car orders between 23rd of August to 8th of September 2025. 18 plus, subject to status and availability, T's and C's, the Atlantis Financial Services.
The Virgin Atlantic holiday sale is now on. This is your sign to taste Jamaican jerk chicken so good it brings a tear to your eye. Catch a New York basement gig worth the 10-block detour. Or hit the dunes in Dubai and find sand in your pockets for weeks. Seize the sale. Book in store or online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected routes. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com.
Leading Britain's conversation with Penny Mordaunt on LBC.
Welcome back. The time is 12:48. Now, before we get back to your views, I just want to bring you up to date with what is proving to be one of the contentious issues that has come out of Nigel Farage and Reform's press conference this morning. I'm just going to play you a clip, and it's focused on him leaving the ECHR, but some of the potential complications of doing that.
Are you concerned that leaving the ECHR could jeopardise the Good Friday Agreement?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, Blair, of course, wrote the ECHR into everything. He wrote it into everything to try and embed it deeply in British law. Can we renegotiate the Good Friday Agreement to get the ECHR out of it? Yes. Is that something that can happen very, very quickly? No, it'll take longer. It'll take longer. So unfortunately, and for a variety of reasons, previous governments have placed Northern Ireland, I'm afraid, in a different position to the rest of the United Kingdom, something that we vigorously opposed. It will take a little bit longer with Northern Ireland.
Well, there you have it. This is the issue that I think that the government are pushing back on and saying that Reform's plans are not workable. Clearly, the Conservative Party has said that it wants to focus on this particular issue. So it is looking at the ECHR, but it says it's doing some deep thinking about how this will impact the Good Friday Agreement. I think the debate is going to be whether you think these are possible or not. Clearly, we've had a similar situation during Brexit. Many people that said that we couldn't leave the EU because of some of those complications, and there were a lot of complications between Northern and Southern Ireland. But clearly, the ECHR was one of the foundational elements to that agreement. But there's been a lot of policy work to say
how you could actually mitigate against that. But, folks, even if you can do it in theory, getting it done in practice, particularly when other nations are involved, we know is very difficult. But I suspect this is going to be one of those hot topics that people are going to focus on coming out of that press conference earlier today. Want to return now to the issue we've been discussing on hospitality and job losses there, but also the impact on the wider job market. I want to go to Doug now. Doug is concerned about the economy. Doug.
Yeah, I wondered why a couple of calls ago you didn't really address the point the gentleman from Aylesbury was making regarding Brexit and the responsibility that your party really holds for gambling with the UK economy and the subsequent very, very poor deal that they negotiated with the EU. I think this really, you have to stand up and admit that the economy is in a pretty bad way at the moment as a direct result of that. The inability to deport people back to France is a direct result of that. There's no reason that the amount of people crossing in small boats rose substantially after 2016, particularly after 2020, 2021.
Well, you've invited me, Doug, so let me jump in there. I mean, I have my own reasons for campaigning and voting for Brexit, and other people will have their reasons. And I still think it was the right thing to do, and that was largely on trade. I wanted to leave a trading bloc that required us to follow a particular set of rules, to get on the same side as the table as nations in CPTPP and nations like America, who want to base their trade on what we call adequacy and equivalence. And I still think that's the right thing to do, and I think that is actually being borne out by what is happening to international trade at the moment. But ultimately, Doug, we put the decision to the people of this country. And I always said, you know, the credit for Brexit doesn't go to people who campaigned for it like me. It goes to the people that campaigned the other way and accepted the democratic result. We are where we are. We've taken some hits, but I think it's still economically the right thing for us to do and will stand us in good stead for the future.
And the figures prove that, do they?
They do. And again, I don't want to take up the hospitality topics time, but go on my timeline, go and look at my top tweet pinned there, and that will give you the reasons to be cheerful, although I suspect it won't have much impact on dissuading you. But we're talking about the hospitality sector,
the
Doug.
Economy's in tatters. We have far less money in our pockets to go out and spend.
So what would you do? Let's not argue about the past. What would you do now if you were sat in the Chancellor's chair?
I'd admit that Brexit was a massive mistake and renegotiate as best one can. And if that involves actually admitting that you have to rejoin the customs union, do so. There was nothing wrong with having free movement come into this country, because we could do the same. My right and that of my family was taken away by that catastrophic deal, the Oven Ready deal.
Would you have another referendum?
Absolutely.
So you
and
would.
I think there are plenty of people who will still be, you know, dumb enough to believe the lies that Farage peddles. He has been emboldened by the policies of your party. He feeds on discontent. He appeals to racists. Your party put him in that spotlight. He's the one that can say the things that no ordinary politician could say a few years ago.
Don't you think, though, that part of the reason why people are giving him airtime is because of what we've been discussing this morning, actually. It's the ability that things do not work anymore. And politicians who are in office, if they fail to deliver what they said would happen, and what they promised to, you know, people are going to look for alternatives. And this is why it's so important that that people are given the space and the permission and the license to think more creatively and recognise that the country's a bit fed up.
Well, absolutely. But it's a situation that's been completely created by the deal that was done. And on the... You know, on the basis of leaving it in the hands of politicians to do the right thing, we were supposed to do that with the Conservative Party. I voted for them up until 2015. I did not vote for them at any point after that. They absolutely catastrophically ruined not only the economy, but the democratic processes in this country. We've now got a situation where Corbyn and his weirdos are going to be coming in on the far left. We've got Farage on the far right. It's going to dilute the centre. The centre is where this country should be. And whether that is a reasonable Conservative Party like the one that you were a member of, or a Blair-ish Labour government, it doesn't really matter. The economy in those days was good because we were members of the European Union. We could trade freely with them. The deal that you mentioned with America, do you really trust that man to stick to his word? You know, we got him for another 3 years.
Well, look,
we can't rely on that. Surely, you have a trade deal.
I believe in democracy, Doug, both in here and in America. But I think you make a really important point about people turning to extremes when they feel things are out of control and that they can't grip problems. They can't see their country being effective, and they don't think they've got agency. And that's why earlier today I wanted us to discuss, you know, how people. Are people feeling that we're a capable nation? But we don't have a time machine, Doug. I mean, if you could do one thing now, I mean, you've said you want to offer another referendum. I'm not sure that necessarily would bring the unity and the centre ground you're looking for in politics. But I mean, what do you think needs to change? Is it the debate? Is it people being given sort of more agency back over their lives?
Well, part of this, on the going back to the hospitality point, part of that there's been an evolution in the way that people spend their free time. You won't have failed to notice the amount of delivery bikes going around with, you know, the online food ordering apps. People buy drink in supermarkets. They don't have the money anymore. That has accelerated, and hospitality, you know, I've got my nephew's over from New Zealand at the moment. He has a British passport. He's perfectly entitled to work here. He's gone for jobs in pubs. There's just nothing available. It may be the time of year. It may be that students are back from university, but there's just nothing available in the local area. They don't have the money anymore. And I just need to return very quickly to the point you made about sort of leaving the Brexit referendum in the past. If we had the same sort of system where we had a government imposed on us from one democratic vote forever, it amounts to the same thing. We are, from what you say, stuck with it.
Thank you for that, Doug. Thank you for that. And thank you also. We've had so many calls this morning that I haven't read out many WhatsApp messages. But thank you for sending those in. They've helped us shape the debate this morning. Particularly struck by one from Mark Norman, who is trying to cheer up the hospitality sector, I think, by saying, don't worry. There'll be lots of illegal migrants that can go into your hotels, pubs and restaurants. So thank you for that, Mark. It has been lovely spending today with you. Thank you so much for listening to me, for all your calls and involvement. I think we've covered a lot of ground, obviously. Breaking news in terms of Nigel Farage's latest announcements. Glad to hear that you are still upbeat about our possibilities as a nation and having confidence in that. And you know, all credit to those business owners we've heard from today in the hospitality sector. You've been listening to me, Penny Mordaunt on LBC. Thank you so much for all your calls today and for listening to me. Tomorrow, standing in for James O'Brien, it's Emily Thornberry. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Ben Kentish. He's standing in for Tom Swarbrick. But next, it's Asma Amir for Sheila Fogarty.
Now, Reform want to tear up a few international laws and treaties and create a few of their own to tackle illegal migration. They would ban anyone arriving on a small boat from claiming asylum and return them to where they'd left, or to a third country, possibly beginning with R. It's going to cost 10 billion quid. All of this relies on Reform UK winning the next election. Do you support their ideas? Mass deportations. Is that where we are, or are mass deportations an overreaction?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Nigel Farage has suggested the UK could offer payments to countries like Afghanistan to enable mass deportation if he was elected. The Reform UK party has been setting out its plans to reduce small boat crossings in the Channel. The strategy would include setting £2 billion to spend on return deals. He was asked by LBC how he plans to avoid the hurdles previous governments have faced. Mr Farage says they weren't as determined.
A lot of people around the country who say they're going to vote Reform believe that we're pretty much the last shot. Pretty much the last shot. That if we don't win that election and start putting in place some of the very necessary changes that are needed, then goodness only knows what this country will look like in 10 years' time.
Labour insists it's getting a grip of the issue, partly through a new returns deal with France. Protesters in Israel have started fires and blocked major roads as they demand a ceasefire agreement to free hostages still in Gaza. The Israeli government is pressing ahead with plans for an offensive following a day of deadly strikes on the Strip's main hospital. Israel's Prime Minister last week ordered immediate talks on freeing remaining hostages. Two police officers have been killed and another seriously injured in a shooting in rural Australia. The suspect remains at large, with people in the small town of Porpunkar told to remain indoors. Mike Bush is the Chief Commissioner of Victoria Police.
We believe he is armed. We have deployed every specialist resource into this area to locate him. It is our priority.
The Housing Minister has rejected claims of hypocrisy over Angela Rayner's purchase of a flat near Brighton. Matthew Pennycook has confirmed the Deputy Prime Minister will pay a double rate of council tax on the property. She also has a constituency home in Greater Manchester and Grace and Favour flat in central London. And a new campaign has begun in London targeting people who play music on their phones out loud on public transport. Transport for London are putting up posters about so-called headphone dodgers on the Elizabeth line. They'll later be rolled out on the Tube and buses in the coming months. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 50 points at 92.71. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, rain clearing in the southeast this afternoon, leaving a mixture of sunny spells and scattered showers. These will be mostly in the north and west, a high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
It's a chill summer's day. The twins are splashing in the paddling pool while Mrs. Thing puts her feet up. She's proper chuffed, having saved money on a British Gas boiler service. Now just £69, down from £109, with a free British Gas membership. Bliss. Well, it was nice while it lasted. British Gas, taking care of things. T's and C's apply. Applies to first year of annual boiler service only and renews at standard pricing. Membership required. Available to new boiler service contract customers. Ends 9th of September. Service by 30th of September.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Asma Mir.
Good afternoon. This is Asma Mir on LBC, sitting in all week for Sheila Fogarty. It is 4 minutes past one. We've got a lot to get through on the programme today. And of course, we are going to start with immigration. It is on very many people's minds. It has been. Can you even put a date on it for the last couple of weeks, months, years? It feels like we're pretty much always discussing it, and so many issues flow from it. Today we're talking about it because Reform UK, Nigel Farage has been delivering a speech outlining Reform UK's 5-year plan if they were to win the next election. And I suppose
the crux of it is that they say that they would do what other parties have said that they would do. They say they would ban anyone who comes on small boats from claiming asylum, and they would actually offer money to the return country to get them back. That bit of it's going to cost £2 billion. There's a lot of furniture in the way of that, of course, as you all know. Reform UK say they would leave the ECHR, they would repeal the Human Rights Act, they would disapply the Refugee Convention for 5 years. There's a lot of detail in this plan, and there's a lot of questions, of course. Labour asking lots of questions. The Conservatives are saying this sounds a little bit like Rwanda. So there's a lot to get into. But I suppose what I want to know from you this afternoon is, do you support Nigel Farage's Reform UK's mass deportation plan? That's actually the bracketed name of the bill that they say that they would introduce. Illegal migration, brackets, mass deportation bill. Or do you think that mass deportations is an overreaction to the issue that we are currently facing? So let me know, would you support Nigel Farage and Reform UK's mass deportation plan? And if you do support it, do you think it would actually come to pass? And if you don't, let me know why as well. You know the number, 0345 6060 973. Same number for WhatsApp, so you can text 84850. Let's go to LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, who can bring us up to date, really, on what happened this morning and what was said. Good afternoon to you, Natasha.
Good afternoon, Asma. Yes, Nigel Farage this morning vowing to deport up to 600,000 people today as part of his plans to tackle what he calls an illegal migration crisis. He gave a major press conference this morning at an airport in Oxford, setting out how he would do things differently if, and of course it is a big if Reform win the next general election. He says that he would make it illegal to enter the UK on a small boat. He would detain people and deport them, giving them no right of appeal. He also says this would involve leaving the ECHR and suspending the UK's involvement in international treaties for 5 years, like the Human Rights Act in relation to migration and the Refugee Convention too. He also said that they would have a six-month window for people to self-report using an app that they were here illegally. People could get paid £2,500 to go home willingly. He said that was far cheaper than the £17,000 it cost to put someone on a deportation plane. He also admitted that women and children could be deported under his plans, but lone men would likely be the first to go. There will be exemptions for people like Afghan interpreters and other exceptional cases. But he could not say where the cutoff point would be for people already here, potentially illegally, in the UK. Speaking earlier this morning, Nigel Farage told the press conference that it was the only way to tackle the growing issue of migration.
The mood in the country around this issue is a mix between total despair and rising anger. And I would say this, that without action, without somehow the contract between the government and the people being renewed, without some trust coming back, then I fear deeply that that anger will grow. In fact, I think there is now, as a result of this, a genuine threat to public order. And that is the very last thing that we want. And I've been saying, of course, for a long time,